you throw the one down here?
I brought this. You can look at it and make sure it's still on
my computer. Great. Thank you. Okay.
You got a crown.
Now I can go eat.
Some new faces, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, this is Dave's idea. We'll just check on here.
I read the
paper.
Yeah.
That was really great.
Yeah.
What was Steve's idea?
I met with Steve. I read the paper.
This week.
Yeah.
And I heard the first one.
Do you want?
All the faces from his craft are the ceremony. ACL seems to be missing in action. Completely. I'm getting a second opinion on Wednesday.
I think Susan could answer that pretty good. Don't you think? Yeah, I agree.
You know, we were talking about the schools. I just have gotten this. So, I'm going to meet with him. And maybe you have to meet him.
Good evening and welcome. I'd like to call this meeting of the Grover Beach City Council to order for Monday, September 15th. We'll start with our invocation. The invocation will be led by Reverend Robert Banker.
They serve the city. We pray that you'll bless them for their efforts. We realize that there are many things they could occupy their time with in personal interest. And Father, we thank you for their service. These things we ask in your name. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. You'll remain standing and do the flag salute. Gage Matthew is going to come forward and do our flag salute. Gage is 11 years old. He's a student at St. Patrick's Catholic School in Aurora Grandy. He enjoys scholastics and loves to read, and he loves jazz. He is a vocalist and participates in various Christmas concerts. He also enjoys golfing and tennis. He volunteers his time and serving lunches at the Oceano Senior Center and reading to seniors in nursing homes. Gage, if you'll go ahead and
thank you. Would everyone please assist me in saluting our flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Gage. You stay right there for just a second. I've got a little present for you for doing the flag salute. We have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Edwell.
Here.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Here.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Santos.
Here.
Mayor Arnold.
Here. going to report on some closed session announcements. On September 2nd, 2003, after meeting in closed session regarding one, conference with labor negotiator with the part-time employees, and two, conference with labor counsel, and this is legal counsel, excuse me. This is regarding the City of Santa Maria Water Conservation and the lawsuit we have with them. The council reconvened into public session. The following reportable action was taken. Closed session item number one, a tentative agreement was reached regarding part-time employees as a 5-0 vote. Closed session item number two, a partial settlement was approved 5-0 vote. The city council meeting was then adjourned. Now we'll move into ceremonial calendar. First thing we have is a proclamation of appreciation for the Sousa Construction. I understand no one's here, but Susan has been given a letter that they're going to that she's going to read in response to our proclamation.
Thank you. This is a letter from Sousa Construction. It's to the attention of the City Council of Grover Beach. Dear City Council members, Sousa Construction regrets that it could not attend tonight's City Council meeting to accept the proclamation of appreciation from the City of Grover Beach. We would just like to say that it has always been a pleasure working with the City of Grover Beach, and we look forward to future projects with the city and its people. Thank you for this wonderful recognition of our work. It means a lot to Sousa Construction and its employees. Sincerely, Steve
Lopez, otherwise known as Sonny Lopez. And medals of merit to Acting Lieutenant Brian Thomas and Acting Sergeant Mark Penza.
Good evening. It's always a pleasure when I can come before the City Council to present awards to members of the Police Department for outstanding service to the community. First, if I can get Acting Corporal Santino Lopez to come forward. Over here, Sonny. Okay, this letter of commendation and life-saving award ribbon bar are being presented to you out of appreciation for your actions taken on May 15th, 2003. On that date at 8:36 a.m., you responded to a citizen's frantic call reporting a possible heart attack occurring at a resident in the 300 block of South 9th Street. Upon your arrival, you located the victim who had no pulse. You initiated CPR in an attempt to revive the victim. You provided CPR for approximately 4 minutes. I don't know if you all know what that means. That means 15 beats on the chest and 2 breaths all by yourself. Got to be in great physical shape to last that long. After that period of pulse returned to the victim, was transported to a local hospital to receive treatment and has recovered from the life-threatening heart attack. Without your intervention, the probability of the victim surviving this life-threatening heart attack would have been in doubt. It is the vision of the Grover Beach Police Department to provide the best public service which reflects our community's superior quality of life. It is the mission of the Grover Beach Police Department to contribute to the wholesome community environment in which individuals may work, play, prosper, raise families, and otherwise pursue the legitimate goals without fear of civil or criminal disorder. Your actions not only reflect positively on yourself, but also on the profession of law enforcement in general. Your commitment to the Grover Beach Police Department's vision and mission were very apparent on May 15th, 2003. Acting Lieutenant Brian Thomas to come forward and Acting Sergeant Mark Penza. The highest award that we can give an officer is when they risk their lives and put their life in jeopardy, and that's the Medal of Valor. Brian Thomas already has one of those. Our next level of award is the Medal of Merit. And if you would like to listen to this one. On August 27th, Acting Lieutenant Brian Thomas and Acting Sergeant Mark Penza responded to a call of a man with a knife threatening a female. The man had already assaulted and fired 4 rounds at the suspect in the upper torso as he continued to advance. On the 4th round, the suspect dropped to the floor, still holding the knife about 4 feet away from the officers. Both of the officers had backed to the driveway during the encounter. As Sergeant Penza removed the knife from the suspect's hand, he said, "Why didn't he use live rounds?" At the same time this was occurring, Lieutenant Thomas followed his range training and performed a combat reload of the sandbag gun, demonstrating his belief that a less lethal solution was still possible if the suspect continued to resist. Lieutenant Thomas and Sergeant Penza are to be commended for their tactics, teamwork, and presence of mind that enabled them to successfully disarm and take into custody an individual clearly bent on setting up a situation that would lead to his death. Both officers demonstrated their ability to put their training to good use and to be flexible in their thoughts and actions in a volatile and dangerous situation. Sergeant Penza's decision not to fire his pistol after 3 rounds from the sandbag gun had not stopped the suspect's advance showed remarkable restraint on his part. This is the second time Lieutenant Thomas has used the sandbag gun to stop suspects who were advancing with blade-type weapons. Thomas is an outspoken proponent of less lethal weapons at training and at our roll calls. Acting Lieutenant Brian Thomas and Acting Sergeant Mark Penza are awarded the Medal of Merit for their service to the suspect, department, and the city on August 27th. Even though their lives and the suspect's life were clearly in jeopardy at the time of this altercation, the officer's use of a less lethal force option and their control of the situation resulted in the suspect being taken into custody without resorting to deadly force. I'm extremely, extremely proud of these two people. You know, you all read the newspapers and you know all the situations that have been going on throughout this country with people with knives. Their foresight in taking the right weapons to this call set up a situation where we were able to use less lethal force. And in my mind, they're heroes. You have also Sergeant Penza. When we go to a situation like that, one person has less lethal force, and the other person has lethal force, because these are life and death situations. And working as a team, they brought credit to themselves, the city, and our police department. And my pleasure to present the Medal of Merit to Sergeant Mark Penza.
Asking if we want to say anything, and as I told Lori Phillips from the Tribune, that we can't really comment on the case because it's still pending criminal prosecution in San Luis Obispo County, and any comments we make in an open public forum may be used against us as part of the trial. So I'm not going to say anything other than I'm glad that we didn't have to, you know, use deadly force.
I will be forever indebted to Brian Thomas that he had foresight to grab this beanbag gun and take it with him so that I didn't have to shoot this guy, because the situation called for lethal force. It was an option. Thank God Lieutenant Thomas did what he did. Otherwise, this city would be in a lawsuit. It'd be a horrible mess. I thank him forever.
I guess I should make this.
No, this is, yeah. The next item on our consent agenda is a proclamation objecting to the proposed closure of the California Specialized Training Institute, CSTI. Whereas the directors of the Governor's Office of Emergency Service, OES, has proposed the closure of the California Specialized Training Institute, its own training branch, as a cost-saving measure, and whereas the directors of the OES in recent media releases has indicated that CSTI is not in the business of saving lives, this minimizing the importance of ensuring that California's emergency responders are adequately trained, and whereas for the past 32 years, CSTI has provided training to agencies involved with law enforcement, fire services, public works, and municipal administration, as well as the emergency management community, special districts, school districts, hospitals, universities, utility organizations, the private sector, and many other organizations, and whereas in the 2002-2003 fiscal year alone, CSTI trained over 7,200 emergency responders from California cities, counties, state agencies, special districts, and other organizations to perform their vital mission in times of crisis, including emergencies involving earthquakes, floods, hazardous materials, and threats of terrorism, and whereas CSTI provides this invaluable training to California with a minimal level of general fund support, recovering its costs through grants, reasonable tuition, and other revenue sources, and whereas CSTI has and is capable of generating in excess of $2.3 million in revenue to the state, while in proposed elimination, its proposed elimination would save only $1 million, and whereas the true benefit of CSTI cannot and should not be measured only in fiscal terms, in that the professional staff at CSTI, through their patience, dedication, and knowledge, have provided an invaluable and irreplaceable service to California's emergency management and emergency response community, and whereas the city of Grover Beach has benefited from the education and training provided to its executives, managers, and staff, and the manifestations of such training has been in an increased level of competence in performing the critical mission of saving lives and protecting property, both during and after an emergency or disaster. Now, there be for it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby find a direct correlation between the training provided by CSTI and the safety of our citizens, and therefore object to the proposed closing of CSTI. We strongly urge the director
and police services, and this is part of what's going on in Sacramento. To save $1 million, to save $2 million, they'll lose $1 million. It's that kind of thing. This is very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. Donna did have that written in big letters here. I'm supposed to present it to the chief, but I'm going to get together with Gage. He's going to teach me how to read and speak. If I could only grow up to be as articulate as Gage. Our next presentation will be a presentation from Aurora Grande High School student, Marina Barcelona. She represented us at the League of Cities in California conference held in September 7th to 10th in Sacramento. And Marina, I guess you're going to give us a little report. All right.
Well, basically, I'm reporting what I did while I was there. I'm Marina Barcelona. As you said, I'm 17, and I'm a senior at Aurora Grande High School. I recently attended the League of California Cities convention in Sacramento as a youth commissioner. And basically, what I did was I observed as well as represented a youth's perspective on current political issues. I had an amazing time there, and I really did learn a lot about politics because I was kind of clueless before, and I really have learned a lot. I attended a lot of lectures and sessions while I was there. A couple of them were Children and Violence, Safe from the Start, How to Have Success Working with the Media, Lighting the Way, Real-World Solutions to Clean Renewable Power, and Environmental Justice Issues and Actions for Cities. The sessions were really quite interesting. And I really liked the ones on renewable power and environment, on the environmental issues. That was really interesting. It was also extremely exciting to see the Capitol building and seeing Abel Maldonado and McPherson in action, which represent us. So that was quite interesting while I was there. I'm really glad I went, and I hope to be an active member of the Grover Beach community, especially once I turn 18 and I can vote. So, yeah. And I'm really glad I got the opportunity to go. So I really want to thank you guys for letting me go and helping me and the rest of the students from Moreno Grande High School to go there. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions of Marina?
Well, hi, Marina. I saw Marina up there, and I'm glad to see she got a lot out of it. Would you recommend this to other students?
Definitely. It's such an awesome experience. I am so glad I went. I went there, and I was, like I said, I was really clueless on politics. So I really recommend it to any adult or student who wants to go, especially the students. It gives you an early chance to get active in politics, so it's a really good experience.
And would you be interested in being on a commission of youth that would report to the city council issues that are affecting youth so that we could
That'd be awesome.
Reach out?
That. Definitely.
Okay.
Sounds awesome.
Thanks, Marina.
I would just like to say that Marina represented Grover Beach very well. She behaved herself. She's a very intelligent girl, and we from Grover should be very proud that you represented us, and we thank you for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I think John touched on it. I think the youth council or youth commission is something we've talked about before, and it's something that's very I see the value in that.
Yeah.
And you volunteered. Don't forget. calling you. Thank you very much.
I can see that she's just like chasm of the students have been similar to what I see with Marina, and this sounds like it's a really awesome thing to do. Maybe we could find a way to send a half a dozen kids at a time.
I'm going to be meeting with the superintendent, so I think we'll have a chat about that.
Yeah.
One last thing, Marina. If you see my daughter this week at high school, tell them how great a time you had and that they should get involved.
I will.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Dickens, who's a counselor at AG, was the one who kind of put this all on, and he is on the he's a council member for Aurora Grande. And he was basically the one who got all the four of the students' interest, two from Mario Grande, one from Pismo, and me from Grover. So Mr. Dickens was a huge, huge help in this. So if you guys ever, know Mr. Dickens at all, just tell him thank you. So he's really great.
Thanks, Marina. Thank you. Awesome. Thanks. Nice presentation. At this time, we'll move into public communications. It might be kind of a... effort and futility because it's all going to be public communication tonight. So I don't know if anybody wants to speak at this time, but you're welcome to if you want to speak for 3 minutes on any item not on the agenda. But that's basically what this whole agenda is going to be tonight. I see a hand, yes. Come on up, Gage.
First of all, I would very like to thank the Grover Beach City Council for this opportunity. For me as a child, this is an opportunity to fully express my gratefulness to the fire department and the police department for all they do. God bless America and the freedom to pray. I will always remember 9/11 as our prayer morning. We watched on television as the Twin Towers burned. We prayed for those inside the towers. We prayed for the firemen who were trying to save them. We watched the towers tumble to the ground. We cried and prayed for those who left us, who would never return home again. We prayed and cried for all the children, young and old, who lost their parents and grandparents. We prayed and asked God to bring peace and quiet to their broken hearts quickly. In faith, we knew that God was there to receive all that went up to him that day, for they were innocent people just working for a living. God bless everyone. Hug your family and tell them you love them every day. This is to all the little children of 9/11 who we will never forget. Thank you.
Thank you, Gage.
Thank you, Gage.
Any more public communication? Sure.
Hi, my name is Marvin DeWalt, and I'd like to know if it's possible that you can have more police officers watch Grand Avenue. I have almost been hit 3 times in the last month and a half with people going through red lights. So it's a concern. I mean, they're just speeding right through it. They're doing it early in the morning and late in the evening.
On Grand Avenue, and a man in a wheelchair.
Can you state your name and your
Don,
address?
Don Latrobe, 1788 Saratoga, Grover Beach. And a man in a wheelchair was trying to cross at the crosswalk, and he was screaming out, "Stop, stop," and the cars were going right by in front of him. And as soon as he got across, and he was pedaling or wheeling fast, they passed right behind him. The fact the crosswalk was there was totally meaningless. And it's insulting to see something like that right here in Grover Beach. Yeah, we got a speed limit. And yeah, they're maybe doing 30, 35 miles an hour, but they have no response for the people. And as the beautification progress comes along, I'm sure that we can put down medians, curbs, plants, and then we'll no longer be able to even see anybody trying to cross at a crosswalk unless they put in a signal. And they're only, what, quarter of a million apiece? Back to my subject. The Seabreeze publication of Grover Beach says, "The Grover Beach City Council is proud to serve the community and is working diligently to make Grover Beach a wonderful community to live, work, play, and enjoy the wonders of coastal living." Well, I spoke briefly last May about the new sex shop that's opening on Grand Avenue in the beautification area. And they call it entertainment, adult entertainment. So they passed, you passed a moratorium that same night, I think, for 6 months. Well, the 6 months is going to be up in October. And I heard a rumor today that October 1st, the new sex shop is going to open in the lighting building on Grand Avenue, right in the middle of our proposed beautification project. So I have to ask, what's the moratorium for? Just a pause before we give into it? We've got 2 stores now. It's going to be a 3rd store. It's opening in spite of, I think, what the people want. There's a man named Cox who thinks that the there's no interest in the porn that's going on Grover Beach, but there is an interest in the traffic. Well, I wouldn't admit that. So it's a sleaze shop, and it's coming along here in the Tribune. They were more concerned about traffic than we are porn. Well, I'm more concerned about the pornographic than I am the traffic. The Diamond program is expanding.
Don, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize it because we have a long meeting.
Okay.
And we're either going to have people do 3 minutes or we're going to have to
mainly
find
I
a
think
way to
there's $996,980 planned to beautify this growing adult entertainment area. And why? You're leaving the barn door open even after the horse is gone. And we got to trust you to stop it. I don't know how you can stop it, but it's got to be curtailed. Thanks.
Then we'll set some... We'll find out where we want to go.
The moratorium that was put into effect in May was extended for 180 days in June. I believe currently it is in place until the end of December.
Can everybody hear him?
No.
Okay, thank you. The moratorium that was put into place in May has been extended until the end of December by council's action in June. The reason for the moratorium is that the Planning Commission and the City Council are looking at the current ordinance that controls the adult entertainment businesses, as well as the possibility of other districts for location of those businesses. The process takes some time because it is a zoning ordinance amendment process. And in the event that the process is not concluded by December, and it should be, the council has the power to extend the moratorium until the process is concluded, no longer than a total of, I believe, 2 years. But the process is on its way. We've had Planning Commission meetings on these subjects. Staff is working, preparing the proposed language. And until the as long as the moratorium is in place, no new adult businesses can locate in Grover Beach. No existing adult businesses can expand in Grover Beach. After the Planning Commission and the City Council make decisions on the language of the ordinance and the location of such businesses, then the door will be open for anybody to come in within the parameters that are set forth by the zoning ordinance and apply to the city for such a use.
Susan Zelchuk, Community Development Department. I just wanted to add a little bit more to that information regarding the adult use ordinance. This item was brought before the Planning Commission last Tuesday on the 9th for a public meeting. It was a noticed public meeting where the commission did work through some of the zoning issues related to this item. And it was noticed, and there was nobody in the audience there to participate. So I would like to encourage you that next month, the Planning Commission meeting on Tuesday the 14th, I believe it is, will be taking this item up again, and you are invited to come attend and give us your input and ideas and concerns regarding this matter.
Thank
you. Here at City Hall in this chamber.
6:30.
Yes, 6:30.
And I'd like to just add on, Mr. Latrobe, some of the things that are being looked at are not only revising that ordinance, but making it more restrictive so it addresses the uses that are out there and could potentially be, you know, in the foreseeable future. The part of the discussion is location, because a lot of us are very concerned about what seems to be unfolding at 10th and Grand. And so those are part of the discussions. We would certainly want the community to be involved. So as students,
we can put it on a list and we can take action on a different agenda. We have a lot of people here, so I think what we'll try and do is this meeting is scheduled to go from 7 to 11. We're going to take a break somewhere in there, like 9 o'clock for 10 or 15 minutes. What I think may be advantageous is that if 75% of the people sitting out here are concerned about the ordinance that we just talked about, then maybe we deal with that first, or maybe there's a way that we can figure out who's here for the biggest bang of your buck and get the most questions out on one issue at one time and solve that issue. What we'll do is you can respond to the council. If someone on the council wants to answer a question, they can feel free to do that. If there's something technical that is more in-depth than we can really answer, we may refer to our city attorney, our city manager, or someone that is involved in that particular agency, whether it's the fire department or the police department. So with that in mind, unless someone on the council has any other input, the other thing is, with as many people that are here, we probably would ask you to just do 3 minutes. I really hate to do that, because once when people come down here, they obviously have taken time out of their schedule, obviously have something that's really important to them, and I really hate to hold them to 3 minutes. So if there's a spokesperson that can speak for people and he wants to speak for a little longer, that's fine. But why don't we do we want us to expand that one issue? Do we want to deal with that issue a little bit more? Are there more questions on that issue? Then maybe we can move to something else. Anybody that's involved that has a question concerning that ordinance and the adult entertainment businesses that are springing up?
Mr. Mayor, is the intent 3 minutes per subject?
I think it would be per person. I don't think we could do it per subject.
Okay. Okay.
Otherwise, I think that would be unfair. Does that sound like it'll work, or I'll take any.
I just have a question. We were still in public comment, and the gentleman that's been up a couple of times wanted to come up to the dais. So.
Okay. Well, I think it's all going to be public comment from here on in. So, you know, if he wants to come forward, come on forward.
Good evening. Honorable Mayor and City Council members, my name is Anthony Brown. I live at 387 South 14th Street, Grover Beach. I really do not, I'm legally blind, and I was here 6 or 7 months ago, and I stressed the fact that concerning streets and drainage, that I was an ex-past mayor myself in the valley, so I had enough experience with streets and drainage. My main concern tonight, I have no gripes, but I do have a lot of suggestions. My number one suggestion, over and above drainage, is the city of Grover Beach must hire a man that can go out and develop the city. We have vacant ground every place in the city, and car lots after car lots. And when you walk in, when you drive into a town and you along the back end of the Cragen building, that is a drain that isn't a drain. And right now at the present time, if they don't pump it all the time, why, it's a good mosquito bed, because the drain goes down and goes no place except into a pit. I don't know why it was ever allowed to be built like that, but I see no reason why it should not be fixed. Another suggestion I would like to make to the city, and I've had much experience at that, I believe that we should either combine our police departments and our fire departments or go to the county service. I've seen it in Wasco, I've seen it in Shafter, and it works beautiful. And people say, oh, you only have more time to get there. Not so. We have proved it, that if you take and do away with your police department, most of those policemen that are qualified will be hired by the county. They will have a substation in your town, and your response time will be just the same or better. As far as the fire department, that has been very successful to combine fire departments or turn it over to the county, because they have a substation. You already have a new fire station here, so you would be all set, and I guarantee you, again, you would not be getting rid of very many employees. Those that were qualified can certainly find a job. And I have a lot of other suggestions, but I believe the prime thing that Grover Beach can do for development is to hire a person. We have the most choice land down there at the foot of Grand Avenue, and it stays idle year after year after year.
Anthony, I'm going to have to stop you. Your 3 minutes is up, and okay. if we run out of speakers, would you please come back? Okay. Do we want to address his concerns at this point? You had three concerns. One is we are trying to, at this point, hire a community development director that is basically. We have hired. I'm sorry, that's right. We have hired a community development director that basically does what you're talking about. He's going to be a person that works at developing those pieces of property and assisting in developing. We also our city engineers in the back. I don't know if Jim wants to speak about drainage and. Do you guys want to handle it this way, or how do you? No? What do you want to do?
We still have, you know, like I say, all the vacant lots we have in town, we don't have a Wendy's in this entire area.
We used to.
Huh?
We used to.
Okay. We do not have a Sonic Burger in this area. Grover Beach needs something down on that end of town. What we need is a big, beautiful hotel so we can get all the revenue. And another thing, in order to for the director that we should hire
He's on board.
to develop the community, We need to offer tax incentives, and that is not really hard to do. You can work with it.
Public, so.
And those are goals that we expressed at the first of the year, and almost all of those goals have been expressed in our 18 goals, right? That we.
But I think we should also inform the public that things that we are working on, we do have the community development director coming on October 1st, 6th. We also just formed another ad hoc committee for the hotel conference center. We are working on the drainage. So these are things that we are doing. And so just to inform the public that some of these things that are being done.
Let's see some action.
You will, sir.
I agree.
Anybody else want to speak? We're just going to open it up at this point. Come on up. Just come on down.
Don't be nervous.
I'm nervous. My name is Cassandra McConaughey, and I'm a local business owner on 9th and Grand. Number one issue is the porn shop that's going on 10th and Grand. As a business owner, I don't want this in the location where I'm at. We've been a great improvement to Grover Beach. We've worked very hard to build our business in the last 3 years, and I am totally against this, especially two blocks from an elementary school. The other one is two blocks from an elementary school. For me to open my business, I had to jump through all kinds of hoops. I couldn't believe what I was put through to open an antique shop. And if you allow another one of these, this is ridiculous. We don't need it. We need more. That's the heart of the community, and we need more businesses brought down there that are for the community, not for some sleazy people. Sorry. Speeding on Grand is another issue. I've sat in my shop and watched all kinds of people get run over, including the guy in the wheelchair. Number three is the People's Kitchen. It draws a lot of drug addicts and transients. They sit in front of my shop and have little lunches, and I watch them exchange money, and there are all kinds of syringes, vodka bottles. There's all kinds of things around my building constantly, and I'm not trying to say it's them, but it's possible that it could be. Number five is the city employees parking in public parking spaces where our customers have no place to park. And I think I'm for your city improvement. And I'm going to go sit down.
What now, when you're talking about parking in public, specifically?
There's about 18 gals that work at the Grover Sanitation Building.
Okay, those aren't city
those
employees.
Those aren't city employees.
Okay, county. They're county, correct? No, they're public. Okay.
Private.
Anyway, but these are employees, and they park all up and down the street all day long. I thought it was only a two-hour parking limit.
You're right.
And they're there all day, and our customers have no place to park. Okay. And trying to build a business down here, it's very difficult, and I'm in the heart of the community. Well, you can't do it. We need your help. We need your support. And putting in a porn shop isn't going to do it.
I just want to explain that sometimes that it comes to us as a city council and we make decisions. But lots of times when people come into the city to get a business license, we don't know the different people that come in to apply for a city license.
It took me 2 months to get my license because
I went
to
the
Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. Then used it as a library.
Yeah.
But it's been several things. But I want to stay in the community. I'm a local. I would like to keep my business. But unless there's some things that are done, it's making it very difficult to stay down here.
Very
and true. I moved here from Arroyo because I knew this could be something. And it can, and it will be. It was, and it will be again. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, come on up. Just feel free.
I work next door to her as a licensed insurance agent at 882 West Grand, so I know exactly what she's talking about. I haven't met with her, but I'm standing here to talk about the same thing, just about. I also live at 281 South 9th Street, so I walk to and from the home and the office on a frequent basis. And my primary concern
Can you state your name?
Oh, Robert Hayes.
Thank you.
And first time I've ever been in front of a city council. So. I have five things here, and I know I can't make it in 3 minutes, so I'll probably have to stand back up later tonight. But my primary concern is the People's Kitchen. I was here at City Hall earlier today. I was interested in looking to see if they had some kind of permit and what the use conditions of that permit were. And to my surprise, the city planning people sitting there, they pulled up, I believe, five different file folders for that parcel area. And none of them contained a permit. None of them had any use conditions. Their sign out front says that they're open from 11:30 to 1:30 Monday through Saturday and 12:30 to 2:30 on Sundays. Just today at 3:15, they were still in business handing out meals. Now, as both a business person and a resident in the same neighborhood, and I walk my dog through there every night as well. But I have some issues that are directly affecting my neighborhood. The transients that come to the neighborhood, and there's several hundred of them every day that come into our neighborhood for the soup kitchen, they leave discarded clothing throughout the neighborhood. They leave discarded trash. There's always a half a dozen plates that they just throw out in the middle of the street. At our townhomes where I lived, on two occasions this year, I've kicked transients out of our landscaping. Just because they want to camp and hide in the bushes at night. I've seen people come down to the soup kitchen in their derelict vehicles. You know, I'm sorry that they don't have a decent car to drive, but it gets them here, but it doesn't get them home. So their car sits on the street for a couple of days broken down. At least two or three times a week, I see the hood on somebody's car open while they're trying to fix the car right there on 9th Street so they can get home. Also, as I walk my dog throughout the city every night, I notice there's a large number of vehicles parked throughout the city where people are sleeping in these vehicles, and I feel that that's due to a close proximity of the soup kitchen. Where else are they going to go? Also, my biggest issue as far as a business standpoint goes regarding the soup kitchen is there are every day 3 to 5 or more, but every day is consistently 3 to 5 transients that hang out on that block for several hours before the soup kitchen opens. And that's bad for business, real bad for business. I wanted to bring up the parking issue since she brought it up. I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about that. I've parked in front of her, but basically, there's a lack of parking in my neighborhood, not so much related to the People's Kitchen, but just the everyday high density of apartments that are around our condos. And I know it's a public street, but I counted 14 cars on my street my front door faces Long Branch. But between 10th and 9th Street, there were 14 cars parked on my street one night. 6 had invalid registration or expired tags. I have a mom who's not the spring chicken. You know, she's not old either. But sometimes
you better say that.
I have several neighbors who are in their 70s, and they're often having to park their cars a block or two away from their homes to walk back home because we have vehicles parked on the street that should not be there. Then I had some other issues that I wanted to bring up, but I know I've taken up too much of your time, so
not too much time. Yeah, let's just. If we can recycle it, and you know, if you got some more questions, basically, if we can have you come back, let's see how far it goes. If we have a lot of people, I don't know if everybody wants to speak, but unless
basically, there's quality of life issues that affect the area of 9th Street, and that's why.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you.
I would also suggest if you don't get a chance to get back up later, it seems like you have your concerns written down. If you can pass those to the city clerk, we'd have a copy of that.
The other thing that we might emphasize is there are committees and commissions in the city that we'd love to have people such as yourself on. We have a Grover Beautiful Committee that deals with some of those issues, and we have a Planning Commission that deals with those type of issues. And we always welcome new people with new ideas. And so feel free to either be...
My mom here won first place in your beautification award, 5 years ago?
Great.
Good.
Great. We like that.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Robert.
Hi, my name is Sue Hartman at 275 North 9th. There's a couple of things, and what Ron just said was one of them. I happen to be a park and rec commissioner. People have a tendency to complain, but they don't want to come to find out what's happening, and we'd love to have people at our meeting. In addition, I don't exactly know how to say this, but I think there are some people who are talking about the development we're trying to do, you know, down at the beach, and they hold, let's say, the city council responsible. Do they know about the environmental, you know, protection problems? Do they know about the private land involved? And even with those parking, I find that our police are very, very responsive if you call them. They can't know where every problem is unless they get called. So, yes, we all, as volunteers, have to take action. You as a council have to take actions. But I also think our community needs to know some of the restrictions and also the part maybe that they can play to help us, you know, get over some of these humps.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Maybe we get people to line up a little bit or something. I bet a lot of people want to talk. They just don't want to.
My name is so used to regularly attend, as I think Mayor Arnoldson will agree, the city council meetings, and sometimes I was only one of three or four people there, but I thought it was important. I'm very disturbed about the fact that curbs, gutters, and sidewalks are, in fact, a part of the law, and the local ordinances let yet people like the Assembly of God Church at the corner of Rockaway and South 9th have improved their property as of 10 years ago and never put in curbs, gutters, and sidewalks. This is a huge safety issue because at least 100 to 200 people go to the People's Kitchen every single day. They come with their baby carriages and their wheelchairs, and they walk down the middle of the street that has needed repair for over 10 years, and weeds are growing down the middle of the street. One of these days, somebody's going to get whacked. And I just don't want to be there when it happens. I'm also very upset about the Assembly of God Church and their illegal light poles. In March of 2003, I called the Planning Commission twice. I spoke to someone named Gloria with an English accent. I told her that the light poles, I believed, were illegal. She agreed. She did not know if anything could be done about it. This church does not have a permit for a light pole, or any of the four light poles that they have. They extend about 30 feet from the ground. And she assured me that within a week I would receive a call. I'm still waiting. That was in March of this year. I have come to the council over the last 8 years and offered to write grants. I'm a professional grant writer. I love this community. I have submitted grants to the city council for the last 10 years and always been rebuffed. I have a track record of raising over $51 million in the last 10 years. I would donate my time to help the community that I love, but I've got no takers. I would love to hear from the new director of community development, see if we can make this a better place. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia.
Donna, did you get her name and address?
Last
can you
name.
Pass that on to the appropriate people?
Hi, my name is Gary Halverson. I'm speaking for my son who lives in Seabright. He has a house he owns, and it's in literally, and it's in downtown, right off of downtown Grover Beach. My concern, and I will ask one question of the mayor, will you ask the city attorney right now if you have the ability under the current laws, under the current statutes of zoning, to stop or restrict the porn shop from opening up? And that's a simple question.
I think he's already answered it, but he can answer it again.
Do you have currently have the ability?
No. But he can answer that.
The difficulty in responding directly is that there is a moratorium and the current ordinance is being revised, is being under consideration.
Yeah, but he's going to predate that. His application would predate the moratorium, predate the revision of the thing, wouldn't it?
There's no application.
There is no application.
So then there is,
to open those types of businesses. whether or not they will fit within the terms of the ordinance and the location indicated will depend on what is determined to be the zoning ordinance at the end of the moratorium. I don't know how else to how. And right now, no. Right now, they can't establish. They can't put in.
First question.
There are no applications. There are no applications.
And we have no applications.
We have no applications from anybody.
No one is to open an adult use business anywhere in Grover Beach.
Right.
So all of the press is something we should ignore. It's not going to happen based on their statement.
How you deal with the press is something that, you know, I can't advise you on.
You know, as Cassandra said, she had to make an application to prepare to do a business where she's at. These same people will have to make the same a similar application. They'll have to go through all the codes and ordinances that we have. But at this point, no one has made an application.
But at this point, there is no ordinance to stop it.
There is an ordinance.
There is a moratorium to stop
it. Revised. We're revising our ordinance. We're making it a little tougher, hopefully. Susan, do you want to speak to this?
As long as the moratorium is in place, I don't know how much clearer I can be.
Right.
As long as the moratorium is in place, no new adult-oriented business can establish in Grover Beach lawfully. No existing adult-oriented business can expand. So to answer your question, no. Nobody can come in right now and lawfully open an adult-use store in Grover Beach.
Do you have a draft of the proposed ordinance? And I will. That's my last question. I'm not going to tie you up any longer. The question is there a proposed draft of this ordinance that we could, as participants in this, review?
The draft is last Planning Commission meeting, some of the areas of concern within the ordinance were being addressed. There is no – I'm not aware of a final draft that's available at this time.
Proposed, pending, rough, anything?
At this point in time, the next time this item will come up will be in the next Planning Commission meeting on the 14th of October, 6:30 p.m.
From
here.
From June 1 when it was stopped – excuse me, one more question. Mm-hmm. From June 1 when the moratorium started – until now, there is no proposed draft of what needs to be done between now and December 1st. In other words, we have now spent from June 1, which you agreed to be, that's when the moratorium started, wasn't it?
Moratorium started on May 5th.
May 5th? 6 months, we're now, okay.
Could we
don't have anything yet.
Steve, you want to
could we that? Have Susan Zelschuk? Susan, could you clarify when this comes back to the Planning Commission?
I think Steve wanted to talk for a minute. Steve, okay. Go ahead.
Well, but I think I was going down the same path.
Okay.
Mr. Halverson, there was a packet given for the last Planning Commission meeting that they're referring to with basically samples of ordinances from other communities in San Luis Obispo County, and I know that was pre-meeting review material for the planning commissioners. I don't know if perhaps that would be helpful for you to page through, see what other communities have done. But Susan's standing right behind you, who was at the meeting and I wasn't there. But there is information that's being reviewed by the planning commission, but I know Susan wants to add something to that.
So we were confirming it between May 5th and now there is no proposed draft.
Susan's our assistant community development director, and she's currently trying to draft an ordinance.
Okay, thank you. Just so that you understand something about
you're up, I'm out.
This particular
thanks,
issue,
Jerry.
Adult uses are background research on what other communities are work have in place, and I propose some direction for addressing the types of uses that we regulate for adult uses and also the definitions of adult uses. The issue of where to allow adult uses and the standards that they're regulated by were also subject at the Planning Commission. However, it's such a complex issue that we have continued it to the next meeting.
The reason that we requested and the council granted a 180-day extension of the original moratorium is in recognition of the fact this is not something that is done overnight. Again, as Susan pointed out, it is a complex issue. You obviously want to create a law, a zoning ordinance that is defensible or as defensible as it can be in court. Secondly, just the process of amending a zoning ordinance is something that takes time, even if you have a ready draft or you know exactly what you're doing. It's a process that takes several meetings, both by the Planning Commission and the City Council. So 180 days was reserved for that process. We're hopeful that it will be met. We are confident that it will be. But we do have an option of extending the moratorium if, for whatever reasons, we are not meeting that schedule.
I think I'd like to just make one other statement for the record on this issue, is that if the commission and council decides to not change the zoning ordinance section pertaining to adult uses at all, if we decided we're happy with the regulations the way they are, the particular location that you're concerned about, the corner where Meeks used to be, with existing uses and our standards, it is not absolute that I don't think they could locate there. With the current...
If the zoning ordinance is unchanged, it does not control rental and sales of videos and discs.
Oh, not videos, yes. That's a different issue, videos. But a regulated adult use in our ordinance couldn't be located at that corner right now due to proximity to churches, other uses, and things of that nature.
Is that the attorney's position?
Yeah. That's our current code.
As the legal position says, it currently can't be done.
That's our code. That's
the current zoning ordinance regulation would not allow the list of regulated adult uses to locate at that corner.
That's right. John?
Yeah, and he had asked a question about draft language and when they'd be able to review it, and there will come a point at which there will be draft language that will be available for review. We will be discussing this in public. You will have an opportunity to comment in public. So none of this will be done behind closed doors. This will be all done out in the open. So there will come a time when there will be a draft, some draft language for you and anyone else in the public interested to review.
Can I get a show of hands of who's really here for this issue? How many people are here for this issue, or this issue kind of alone? Are we answering your questions? Show of hands, are we kind of going where you want to go?
We're getting information we didn't have before.
Okay.
Okay.
Like John says, I think the thing to do is to be at the Planning Commission meetings. That's where all the information will be forthcoming. If you're really interested, be at this Planning Commission.
No legal application has been submitted. No application for an adult business has been submitted. There is no legal application. I think you used that word three times. What about a person just opening his business illegally? I mean, it's moving. They're decorating windows, and carpenters are there, and floor layers are there. So it looks like they're planning on opening. What happens if they open illegally?
They will be shut down legally.
Yes.
That's simple. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Pardon?
They'll be shut down legally. That's pretty simple.
Okay. Yeah. So that's...
They have to do is the same thing that any other business in the community would have to do. They have to come here, get a business, open their business just with all the same parameters.
Okay.
And even the construction that they're doing has got to be done to the aspect, to the...
Specifications
of the city.
Codes.
Right.
I understand that, but it just seems like they're moving, like they're planning on being there. So you've answered my first question. My second question that both Mr. City Attorney and the lady from the Planning Commission have raised in my mind is what you're working toward is within the parameters of zoning and civil rights, I guess, is the issue, that you're working toward defining a place where these adult businesses will be open. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a given that there will be another adult business in Grover Beach?
And I'm sorry, I was listening to two
things. Go ahead.
Let me answer your first question.
Yes, sir.
Staff's job is to do research, provide information, and supply it to the Planning Commission and the City Council for them to make the decisions.
Okay.
So the staff is not making a choice. Part of the process, and it's one of the reasons why the process is not a fast process, is that there is a lot of research to be done both on planning side and the legal side. So we will provide all of the information that we can gather and all the information that is requested, and we'll present it to the Planning Commission and the Council, and they will make the decisions that they will make with regard to the language of the ordinance, the districts that this use will be ultimately permitted. And I apologize, but I did not hear your second question.
Well, which leads me to believe that it's a given that an adult business will be open, another adult business will be open in Grover Beach. Did I hear that wrongly?
I did not make such a statement, and I didn't hear anybody else in this room make that statement.
No, the statement wasn't made, but it was implied.
I can't answer that because it will depend on the territorial boundaries that are drawn by the ordinance.
Uh-huh.
It will depend on the district in which ultimately such uses are approved.
Okay.
It will depend on the type of uses that is defined within the language of the ordinance.
Okay.
So I can't say yes or no to that question.
Okay.
It all depends.
Thank you for your
answer. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marvin DeWald. I live at 581 Manhattan. I have a question. How many adult bookstores are roughly going to be allowed in the city if you have to have a set amount for a place that you're going to set aside? And how many do you have right now?
Would you like to answer that?
Neither the ordinance nor the law, at least as I understand it, contemplates a given specific amount of locations. I believe that there are currently two adult uses under the current language of the ordinance that is in place during the moratorium. With regard to how many more can locate will depend, again, on where it is decided these uses will be permitted, what are the territorial boundaries, in other words, how close can they be to each other, how close can they be to schools, parks, residential districts, places of worship. All those territorial limits and lines will determine by geographical limits how many more there can be. You're dealing with limited space.
Okay. I used to live down in a city called Pomona, and they have a lot of these type of sex shops, and I will tell you, a lot of people do not want to go around the businesses that are in those areas. They want to go around them because they don't even want to be associated with them. Personally, as on the record, I'm pretty much against having sex stores in the town, but I don't have much more to say than that. So I'm just letting you go with that.
Thank you.
I think one of the things that we need to define is what exactly do you consider sex shops in a sense? Okay, we had a lingerie shop that was very, I felt, explicit in certain items that were in the window. They've now moved to the neighboring city. You also have liquor stores who sell magazines that are explicit. So I think in going and reviewing all of this, we need to make it very, very clear what exactly do we consider sex shops and what's being carried in those businesses.
Sure. Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council of Grover Beach, thank you very much for recognizing me. My name is Don Clark. I live at 1785 Newport Avenue, Grover Beach, California. I've resided there for 7 years now since retiring. I feel a little bit like Marcia said a while ago. The last 2 weeks, my wife and I have been very, very carefully considering whether to sell and move from Grover Beach because of an ongoing problem that you have. It appears in a lot of cases what the most of the people want to see is something, and this has been expressed over and over tonight, want to see this town a little bit more respectable in a lot of areas, cleaning up, sex shops, the whole thing. I think you'll find that most of these things can be handled. I don't think you can go on with selective enforcement of laws. You can't do that forever. Although I am glad that you did take care of one complaint, and that was a hedge growing over city property on a sidewalk. I think most of you know about that. It was finally cut this week, or last week, rather, toward the end of the week. And I've seen an increased amount of traffic using this now, including school kids, young kids, older people walking, whereas before they had to walk down a very busy arterial street, which is Oak Park, or cross over to the other side, cross a busy street to the other side to get down that street. And I'd like to congratulate you. It only took you 3 months to get around to doing this. In the meantime, I've seen time after time young kids walking on Oak Park Avenue. But it only took 3 months to accomplish this. About 3 months ago, 20 to 25 RVs were told to move off the city streets. I got the blame for this, although I said at the time I was not filing a complaint. I did not make a complaint, but you had them all move. I don't think it did a bit of good because most of them are back already. Same one, same place, same time, all over again. Over and over again, I've asked the city to please try to help us get a place somewhere where we could set our garbage cans out so that we could adequately have them picked up. Has not been done yet. So as a result, a lot of times our garbage does not get picked up. Same thing with the mail, blocked mailboxes. There will be no further complaints from me regarding any code violations in the future. I found out if you do complain, the first thing that happens, the person who's in violation of the code runs to the police department, screams to them that they're being harassed. Next thing you know, you got a policeman at your door, and I'm sure that the chief has better time to use his officers than run down these type of things. So rather than put up with the hassle, I will not file any more complaints, period, about any code violations. If you bother to look, most people, like I said, are looking for the small things. Why run a herd of elephants down Grand Avenue stepping on ants when you can do it with the present staff that you have? You gentlemen and ma'am are myself given 20 hours a week for code enforcement. Within 2 weeks' time could certainly take care of 99% of all the code violations in the city of Grover Beach. 20 hours is plenty enough. I see the light is flashing at me. Small things is what you need to take care of. It is not being done. Your code enforcement, your city attorney or city manager is asking for a full-time enforcement officer. You haven't utilized 20 hours a week at the present one yet. And until this goes down from you people to the city manager, to the department heads, to enforce the rules that they have, it's not going to change. And I really don't care much to have any department head respond to anything I've said. If anyone wants to respond, I would leave it up to you because you're the one that makes the decision. You're the quasi-judicial body. You pass the rules, the regulations. It's up to the city attorney to interpret them and pass them down to the department heads. But I want to hear what you have to say if you have anything to say to me.
Anybody want to respond, Mr. Clark?
Thank you, Councilman Eckbaum.
Anybody?
I would just like to find out exactly where we are with our code enforcement officer, what we decided we were going to do with that. And also I would like to tell the gentleman that was just here that we have a Grover Beautiful Committee. They have zones, and they go around, and they turn in the complaints. So it isn't just people, but it's also we do have a volunteer committee that it's also comes and then gives the information to staff, and we take it
for your time.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Can I respond to Mr. Clark for a minute first? I think part of what's happening with code enforcement, too, is I don't think there's a solid feeling from this council how we want to go with code enforcement. I feel a lot like you do with some of the enforcement problems that we've had. I've had people complain about my house as far as things that, you know, code enforcement, and you feel like you've been targeted. And I think that what you're talking about as far as a part-time code enforcement person that works on complaint-driven basis is exactly what you said. It gets to be a situation where one neighbor tells on another neighbor, then somebody gets in a fight, and it goes on, and it's not productive. We either need to have a full-time person that's out there and he's making code enforcement violations pertinent to everyone and everyone is treated the same, or we need to have our police department involved in situations that you're talking about where there are vehicles parked on the street and they need to be tagging those vehicles maybe at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and maybe that's part of their job. And so there isn't a consensus on the council how to deal with code enforcement. And I think that's probably where the code enforcement has lacked. I would just as leave get rid of a code enforcement officer. I think that a lot of things could be, in my opinion, handled by either the building department with building violations, and everything on the street should be handled by the police department. And I know the police department is not going to agree with that, but that's tough. I think that we need no code enforcement officer. That's my personal opinion. Everybody up here, everyone else up here probably disagrees with that. They want a full-time code enforcement officer. I don't think it's the job of our Grover Beautiful to be out there looking at your house and my house, determining what my backyard looks like or what your backyard looks like, and turning those enforcement violations in to the city. I think that puts them in a bad position. I think that makes them quasi-Nazi people, and I don't think that that's their job. I think their job is to beautify the community, not to be snitches. So I agree with you on a lot of things, but I don't think I'm in the majority here.
Well, if I could kind of harp in here, I think the one thing that this council is in agreement on or in consensus with is that code enforcement was high on our list of goals, and I mean proactive code enforcement. Now, we need to go through and define what we're enforcing and what they're looking at and how we're going to do that, and I think that's an exercise that we're going through, and we've given the city manager and staff a direction to bring this back to us as quickly as possible because we know it is a big concern, and it is certainly a concern of this council. And so now the mayor had talked about how he doesn't feel we need a code enforcement officer. I guess that's something we're going to debate. Do we need to go down that road? Is it something worth sending the police officers out there to enforce these items? And I think these are things we need to be discussing, and let's come to some consensus so we can start moving, all pulling in the same direction rather than opposite direction. So we are certainly addressing it. It is a high priority, and it is one of our top goals of this council.
And I just want to clarify, the Grover Beautiful Committee doesn't go looking in backyards, Ron. I think some of it is...
I know. That was a way out there expansion. But, I mean, it's like I think that their job isn't to be snitches. Their job is to look at someone that's done a very nice job and commend someone. I think the opposite is not a good part of their job. That's my personal...
I invite you to come in and
clarify.
Sure.
When the budget was adopted, the city council approved of revenue enhancements that total about $350,000. Those revenue enhancements have not been adopted by the city council yet because we wanted to go through a blue ribbon committee process where folks who were impacted by those enhanced fees would be able to deal with the staff and give us feedback about where our services could be improved, where we might be able to streamline some things, and then come forward to the council and suggest where more equitable fees could be charged. The council placed the proactive code enforcement enhanced staffing on hold until enhanced fees were identified in order to recover that. One of the Blue Ribbon Committees is Blue Ribbon Committee to deal with, in effect, code enforcement, those activities of the police department and fire department that are code enforcement related. Both Chief Bradbury and I have suggested that folks like Mr. Clark might be excellent candidates to be involved in that kind of a committee to give us that kind of feedback and help us formulate an enhanced program dealing with code enforcement, a proactive code enforcement. So that is an opportunity that's out there, and we have not been directed to deal with proactive code enforcement. In fact, we have been directed to put that on hold while we deal with the that Blue Ribbon Committee process.
Mr. Lieber.
Usually I'm pretty vocal. I have a sore throat, so bear with me.
Thank God. I mean,
yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
Everyone's really grateful that I'm have a sore throat. Mr. Clark, I just wanted to let you know that I have an envelope of things that I keep, and I've kept your letters, and I agree with a lot of what you've said, and because we're human, I disagree with a lot of what you say in your letters, but I respect you putting the effort into doing this. I think it was this date prior to the town hall meeting, we were supposedly going to have a code enforcement workshop, and it got tabled because of the council direction, And Ron and I are at polar opposites on this. I don't necessarily see successful code enforcement being managed by the police department. I respect our police department. I think people react differently when a cop knocks on their door versus being another employee. They feel like they're in trouble. There's a city in this county that has a very successful proactive code enforcement program. It's not managed by the police department, which makes police officers exceptionally happy. It's managed by, actually, the fire department. They've got multiple people on shift at any one time. It's more of a community-based enforcement project. They work with folks, but they hold them accountable. And those are the issues that I want to see discussed in this community, is something that might not seem traditional with automatic enforcement by the police department, but something that we can manage. And I agree with many of your concerns. I just wanted to vocalize those.
Could we know what city?
Paso.
14.
Sorry about that. Your turn.
Hi, this is my first time here, and the reason I'm here is because of Mr. Clark.
Can you give your name and address, please?
Oh, yes. My name is Alan Martinez, and I'm 1797 Newport, Rural Beach, California. And I am the neighbor of Mr. Clark. I've been living in that home approximately a little over a year, and I always get my mail. As far as the people walking on the side street on Oak Park, hardly anybody ever uses that. Truth, people do walk there, but very, very seldom. So because he says the bushes were trimmed, now he says more people walk there, that is untrue as well. And I'm sure I'll be back more, but that is all I have to say for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Catherine Talavera, I'm at 1295 Driftwood, and I'm up here for two reasons. One, I wanted to thank the council. You guys have been doing a really wonderful job with our beautification committee. And if you recall, I was up here pleading for a full-time code enforcement officer. And I want to say to my community members, unlike Ron, I don't consider myself a sneak.
I said snitch.
Snitch. I consider myself part of the legal team of officers that were kind of helpers and more eyes. And it's really a very delicate position to be in when I happened to live on a street that had drug infested, and I mean, you know, the corner block was, the kids were just having a good time selling drugs. And so it took us, I think, a year to get them out of there. And then up the street I had the same thing. But, you know, it's a constant, it's like chipping away at something. If you all noticed, we've changed our community in the last maybe 5 years. You know, we're getting a lot of people from L.A., San Jose, whatever, and we really need your help. If you want to have a nice place, you've really got to tell these guys what you need. I live on Pike, and this diesel truck loves to park and sleep behind my house. And I call the 473-4511 and tell them that's a code enforcement problem. And then, you know, every 3 months he does it. But, you know, one of these days...
You're the one that keeps making me move my truck.
So I really would like to ask you to follow through on the full-time person. And I really see the code enforcement person helping us as a community. I don't see us as being heavy-handed. I agree with Stephen that I don't want a police officer at my door. I'd rather have Mr. What's his last name?
Youngblood.
Youngblood come. He's been doing it for quite a while. He's an ex-officer, and he's really very good because, you know, even with the Spanish-speaking people, and listen, I'm Spanish-speaking, so I can be racist. They double up, you know, in the garage on my yard, on my street, you know, and he had to go over and talk to them. And it took him, like, you know, took him 3 or 4 months, but he got them to, they don't sleep in there anymore. So I'm really proud of my street now, but it's, you know, I've been in this city 10 years. I've been on the Grover Beautiful 2 or 3 years, and I joined them because I want to help. So, Mr. Clark, we have a vacancy. If you'd like to come and help us, I'd love it. So... Thanks. I don't know. I'm up.
No, let me clarify what I was going to say about the police department, too. I'm talking about those violations where someone's parked there for 6 months and you see the weeds growing up around the wheels of their car. Those are things I'm talking about. I'm not talking about somebody.
Respond to that, being a woman and living only with my 82-year-old mom. And, you know, I have some gentlemen, and I use that term loosely, on my street who... When they get called in, they always blame me, but I've never had a harsh word. And I also feel real confident that I'll call you guys and they'll be right there to, you know, tell them where the line is. I really believe that I live in a wonderful community, that even though we may raise voices at one another or disagree,
I really don't think, you know, where's that man who lived in Pomona? I mean, Lord. No, I really feel sad. And I'm a single woman. Yeah. Well, with a small dog, not even a big dog.
You know, one of the things that I saw, I used to be a police officer in Las Vegas, and I helped investigate a homicide that was basically stemmed from that type of thing. Yeah. One guy had a dog that barked a lot, and you know, et cetera, and the other guy complained, right. And next thing I know, they're down at this at the car wash on 8th Street shooting it out. And those are the things that concern me. It's not going to happen a lot, but people get mad when someone says, "Hey, your motorhome was parked in front of your house." Well, there's 10 other ones around the block. Why me? What? Hey, who complained? And that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think that by having a police officer or a designated person other than our Grover Beautiful, someone that's professional out of the mainstream, that's all I'm saying. If that's something you want to do, I guess you can do that as a citizen all day long. But
there is.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Can we move on, please?
Yeah.
We've been here an hour and a half.
As Mr. Clark says, shut the mayor up.
Yes.
Yeah. He only gets
can
one
Can we start some new stuff? Wait a minute now.
Honorable Mayor, City Council, Lieutenant Brian Thomas with the Grover Beach Police Department. I'd like to respond to some of the issues that have come up in the 1700 block of Newport involving issues. Just want to point out most of these are related to parking. It's a PUD complex. Inadequate parking on the street and in the complex because of the numerous people living there has created problems. The last 8 to 9 months, the police department has responded numerous times to both or one of the complainants' complaints. We've also sent out the code enforcement officer, the fire chief, the building inspector, the city crew on vehicles parking in front of the mailboxes. Tried to work with the post office on that. They said there's nothing we can do about it. If there's a car in front of it, we're not going to deliver the mail. Concerning the trash company, try to talk to them. If there's a car blocking the trash can because of the new arms, they will not pick it up because of the liability issue. I worked with the Cal Poly students that were living in the front house. They agreed to move it. The vehicles are being moved on a daily basis, so therefore there's nothing we can do about the 72-hour violation. The vehicles that were out of registration, we did cite them, and they were registered. This is coming down to a neighbor dispute that has involved a lot of our time. Each party has been advised to contact their own attorneys for possible restraining orders. We've looked at their deed restrictions. We've looked at everything that we can possibly to try to adjust or take care of this problem. And as I told one of the parties, what do you expect your police department to do? Go to your neighbor's house and kick his door in and take him to jail because you don't like where he parks his car. That's how bad it's gotten. We're trying to work with both parties. Every officer has gone out there besides myself. Three sergeants, four officers, the chief of police, the code enforcement officer, have been subject to allegations of complaints and comments.
Come up with idea on the gang mailboxes, and I have passed on to Mr. Clark that the traffic committee has agreed to put a 8-foot red zone if it's four mailboxes or more, and we'll be coming forward to the council next time out. That is if Mr. Clark wants to pay for it. So we are trying to do something. It's the streets. It's what are we going to do in the future. It's Tang looking at on Long Branch. Do we go to putting diagonal parking in because it's so wide to give us more parking spaces? But to do a two-block area and it's $2,500 to stripe it, you know, there are money issues here. But the future is open to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
My name's Don Fielding. I live at 899 North 2nd in Grover. I would like to make two or three observations. I have been to some council meetings. I've met with a couple of you. I watch the proceedings on television. I think it's a great way to educate the citizens about the issues the council deals with. And the observation that what I concluded from watching quite a few council meetings is that this council becomes involved in issues, and I'll mention a couple. The discussion of the fire department, the training component, the issue of paying per call, paying for training, police department. I didn't happen to see or be present at the council meeting where the chief spoke about pay increase. But, and I hope this doesn't sound critical of any one person, I'm talking process. I noticed that when the council deals with these issues, the individuals, whether they're staff or in some cases the public, talks to council members, sometimes specifically, sometimes as a group. Staff talks to council members, sometimes specifically, and sometimes as a group. And the city manager sits to the side and seems almost uninvolved. I think when it came to the issue of the fire department and the police department, before any staff stood up to make requests, demands, pleas, the council should be able to turn to the city manager and say, either give us a recommendation if you aren't up to speed on the issue, we're going to continue this matter on the agenda. We want the city manager to fully study the issue of joint agreement with Oceano, contracting with CDF, pay increase for police officers. I think that not to do that is a doesn't address what a city manager represents in the way of a resource to the council. The council setting policy based in many cases on the city manager's recommendations. And the city manager's recommendations should be based on the analysis of the data and the legal implications. And I see this council.
A little bit of change of subject matter here for you here. I have two pieces of paper here. I have page F5 of the FY04 budget, which is concerned with the general fund revenue. I have here a copy of our Sea Breeze, the latest edition. My question is, what happened? How did we get the extra $1.5 million for our general fund? FY04 budget shows total general fund revenue of $4,708,000. On your Sea Breeze breakdown here, City Budget News, adopted appropriations are $6,264,000 for the general fund. Now, either your budget is wrong or this is wrong.
You didn't hear, we won the lotto.
Good, I hope you it's not fraudulent. Anyone want to respond to that question?
We'll let our finance director, I think, respond to that.
I really ask you guys this reason because you're our council members. You're elected by us. I would think that you would have caught the same thing that I caught. I read this thing just like you do. I got a copy of this just like you have. And you never made the comparison between the two. So, anyway, find out a solution for us, will you? I think the public would like to know that.
Okay, Gayla, would you like to speak to that?
Let me just get back to it.
Okay. Did you want to... The okay, well, we'll get back to that. Will anybody else have a question? We'll see if we can come up with an answer for you.
I just had a quick question.
Sure, Robert.
Regarding the sex shop there at 10th and Grant. I think I misunderstood something, but I was just curious. With the ordinance being passed or being worked on, the two shops that are apparently in process of doing whatever, my question is, are these two shops exempt from the future location that the council is going to choose? Is everything going to be pointed to wherever this location is going to be selected, or are these two shops exempt from that rule, and then any future shops would be held accountable to staying wherever the council decides to put that area? I think I lost some people there.
That tracked.
No, you're right. No, you're right.
You're okay, yeah.
You're not
going to
like the answer.
I had a feeling it's probably
going to
either one
way. As I understand your question, if the Planning Commission and the City Council decide that this type of use is not, should be moved to a different zoning district,
Your question is, what happens to the stores that are currently established?
Correct.
Is that correct?
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay. They would be what's determined as non-conforming uses, and then there would be several options available as far as amortization or grandfathering them in. It would depend on the circumstances.
The city would have the authority through a process to request those other shops that may have gotten in before this.
And buy them out somehow. And if that's what you're talking about, you need to say that, because it's, we're trying to get the word out here of what's happening, not some legalese that leaves it all up in the air.
All right. I apologize if I didn't make myself.
If we come up with some new ordinance, it doesn't cover people that are already there.
The uses will be grandfathered in, yes.
Yeah. However, they will be considered non-conforming, and they will be restricted on expansion. And I think if you're a non-conforming use, correct me if I'm wrong, Susan, that the intent is to bring that use into conformity as soon as reasonable. So they would not be allowed to expand, even if they are grandfathered in.
Gayla
Chapman. Okay, yes, I was going to say, our Administrative Services Director, Gayla Chapman, has an answer for your question, Chuck. Ken.
I think it was Ken. The general fund revenue, which was on page F5 of $4,708,000, is revenue to the city. Appropriations, which were adopted, are the $6,264,000. An appropriation is an expenditure. And the other is a revenue. They're two different items.
These are short of $1.5.
No, that means it includes it includes other sources like Oak Park and things like that. Is that right?
Not for general fund. Could be reserves that are being used.
Reserves,
there are various.
Okay.
We're spending more than we're taking in. That was
for this
point.
Current year, yes, we are.
It just means you're short another $1.5.
No.
For me, that's why I'm telling you. No matter where you get it from, if it's not revenue money from the sources you listed on your revenue page, you got it from someplace else.
No, the best resource is to look at the cash position summary, which shows all sources of revenue, which include revenues, one-time revenues such as carryover, transfers in from other funds, transfers out to other funds. And those numbers add up to the numbers that are in the sea breeze. They also add up to the numbers that are revenues, because revenues on that one graph just deal with ongoing revenues that will come in the door during the year in the general fund. So if you look up on the wall, you'll see a beginning balance. That means money that's being carried over from the prior year. Then it lists property taxes, other taxes, licenses, permits, fines, so on. All of those categories that go down to where it says miscellaneous, those are the numbers that add up to the revenue page that Ken showed with the bar graph on it. Then in addition to that, there are amounts that are transferred into the general fund and amounts that are being transferred out of the general fund to other funds. So the total resources available to the general fund is $7,584,000, something like that. If you look at the cost side, the appropriation side, there's amounts there for the operating budget, which looks like about $5.4 million. There's about $766,000 for debt service and major capital. Those two amounts add up to the...
One remark. I sat through all 3 days of your budget hearing here, and this was not explained that way in the budget hearing. This was not the way that you passed it, because I was here when the whole budget was read and you passed the budget. It was not read to you like that. This is a page that's in the budget book that's under total general fund revenue. Total means in total. You have a total down here of less than $5 million, and he's telling me it's $6.5 million. So why is total general fund revenues at the top of the sheet? That's your question to ask.
I think you answered it. It's on another sheet.
Well, basically, there are three categories of resources that are available. There's beginning balance, carryover from prior years. That's a resource, not a revenue. There are taxes and fees and permit revenue and so on. That's revenue. That adds up to the $4.7 million. In addition, there are transfers in from other funds and transfers out that net out. That's all part of resources. That all adds up to $7.6 million, more or less.
And that is in the budget. It's just not on that page. So you have to look at other parts of the budget. You just can't look at one page. You have to. It's all in there. Am I right? E6, E7.
I would just like to make a comment. Are we done with that particular subject?
I told him so.
Okay. Mr. Fielding, did he leave already?
I don't see that bright yellow jacket.
He's probably watching it at home.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment that our city manager has meetings with staff. Staff makes recommendations to our city manager. From there, it comes to us. And then we have what's recommended by the city manager. We almost have like three different options to go. So we have the choice to ask questions at that time. We can either go with staff's recommendation, or we can add or delete things that are recommended to us, or we can just drop it all. So the city manager does not run it. We make the policies, and we give the directions.
I think you're
and he is involved, I will say.
What Dee is trying to clarify is that in any item that we have, an agenda item, there is usually a staff recommendation. It could be broken down to three different recommendations, as Dee is saying. One, that you agree with staff recommendation. Two, that you disagree with staff recommendation. Or three, that you ask further questions and give direction. And that may have been what Mr. Fielding was talking about as far as the fire department. Might not have been enough information on those subjects or on that item, and we may have asked for more information, and that's probably what
that's what we did.
Is that what we were talking about? I think that's what he's talking about, where we actually had an agenda item. We asked for more information or asked for information from department heads or department people so that we could further identify which item we want, which one of those staff presentations we wanted to make. Now that I've muddied that up. Helen, your opinion. So if we were just a rubber stamp up here, I don't think you want that either. I think you want the city manager to earn his money, and I think you want your council to ask tough questions and make decisions. And we're not always a rubber stamp.
Mayor, we've got faces out there that haven't spoken yet. I'm afraid that we're going to wear people down and they're going to walk off without getting their new subjects in there. So could we ask for any?
Sure. Anybody that wants to bring something forward that's new or
anything.
If you want to just any other speakers? Liz.
Good evening. Liz Dukas, 555 Seabright Avenue. Grover Beach. I am here once again as a very concerned citizen for the future of Grover Beach and the current decision making regarding what's going on today as well as for our future. I'm very concerned about the overbuilding of our city at all costs to its residents in order to meet unreasonable numbers and not implementing proper support systems such as our roads, drainage, and other much neglected areas of our city. I know I've said this numerous times, but I did want to say that this evening. I want to emphasize smart, planned, well-thought-out growth, not in a haphazard, disjointed manner. I would hope for fair and equitable treatment of all those going to personnel of the City of Grover Beach on city business, that everyone gets treated fairly, is giving full knowledge and information to guide our residents and educate those coming into our community who wish to change or alter our town. Citizens should be able to raise significant questions in how the city of Grover Beach is being run without fear of being labeled anything other than a concerned citizen. Our city employees need to always be in search of expanding their knowledge base to increase efficiency to protect and keep safe its citizens. There have been a lot of others before me that have attempted to work with city personnel in a positive way for the betterment of our future as a community, but end up being perceived in a negative light when questioning decisions made on our behalf that affect our everyday lives. Grover Beach needs strong leadership to handle the expanding and diverse needs of our little town, and we need to start from the top down and change the way we're doing business to reflect a more positive, thoughtful, concerned, and bright future. Please know that myself and others will continue to be as proactive as we can for our city, and that we will be talking to citizens, reaching out to those that ask us for help, and trying to further educate everyone involved with Grover Beach. This comes at a crucial time for us as we're updating a lot of our policies and procedures, and none of us want to get left behind in the decision-making processes of our city. We'll be watching, looking, and listening to where our city leaders will be taking us, and I hope you will start listening to your citizens more openly and really take what us citizens have to say to heart, because we do live here, we know and see what's going on, and we want to go in the right direction and not down a destructive path from which we may never recover if we don't have the foresight and full knowledge needed for decisions to be made today. We desperately need full and open oversight to make sure all is being done in an appropriate and fiscally responsible manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Liz.
I have a minute.
Sure,
Mr. 30 Schultz. Seconds.
Yeah. I appreciate those comments from Liz, and I just wanted to, I'm thinking since we're here this evening, I'd like to issue a challenge to the residents of this community. As Liz alluded to, we are going into major updates of policy documents in this community. We're in the midst of a housing element trying to deal with state mandates. We're in the midst of a circulation element, one who's at home watching this.
Steve?
I want to just jump on John's soapbox and
you can't jump.
Yeah, I can hobble onto John's soapbox. I dreading this meeting a little bit, not knowing what we were getting ourselves into, but I think it's been a great meeting. We've had a chance to meet a lot of folks from the community that we don't normally interact with. This is what makes a community, and this feedback's important, and sometimes, yeah, it's a little painful to take, but it's important. And as John said, we're in a transitionary period right now. You can see projects going on down towards the beach. We're ramping up the ad hoc committee for a hotel project again. There's a lot of things going on that we're talking about in these meetings, and we welcome your input. And I back up John's challenge. Thank you.
I think it's nice to see new faces out there. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see that you took your time out of your evening to come and be here in person. I know many of you can sit home and watch it on TV, but when we see your faces and see you asking questions, it's so nice. Or to see you on the street and listen to your concerns, that's pretty nice. And even like tonight when we had our student here, it's nice to see we had two students here, a young fellow. That young boy has many, many opportunities for him. And the young girl, if you could have just seen her at the conference, she was awesome. You'd have been very proud. In some of the sessions that we sat in and how they spoke to other council people and staff, it was wonderful. And how nice to know that we have young people here in our city that are concerned about what goes on.
David? Well, I think this is one of the first steps to opening up communication. I think this is Dave's idea was great, and I think we are receptive to your thoughts and your concerns, and that's what we're here. That's what we're trying to do tonight. Anybody else? Ken? No, Chuck.
We get the at least the taller one. Name is Chuck Ashen. I live at 458 Seabright. I thank you for this opportunity tonight, Councilman Ekbaum and the mayor and the others on the council there for holding this open forum. As we know, it's been done throughout our country there, and it gives its citizens a chance to see what their council's thinking and to evaluate them and see where they're heading in the direction there. I want to mention a few things. I have a couple questions on. I'd like to see you as my council representatives to look into. They're touching on a couple areas that have already been touched on. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I think the city owes it to its taxpayers to take care of some certain basics in the city. As you well know, I'm a strong street advocate. I think it reflects a lot of our city. You have lousy streets. When your guests come in here, they aren't going to think twice about wanting to move to Grover Beach there. It reflects on everything in our town. Another thing is curbs and gutters, lighting, storm drains, parking. I think if the city concentrated on that type of infrastructure there, you could forget about most of this other stuff, that it'll all fall in place, because you'll eventually entice businesses and other people to come to your city there to locate there. You can't take on their job for them there. You can spend a lot of money looking into doing their job for them, but they're going to tell you, frankly, we run our own structure. Trying to duplicate and match these people, both in salaries and bodies. We can't afford that. We're out of the race before we get out of the gate there. We're ending up, we're spending all our available funds on staff, on matters relating to making staff's job more easier, but there's nothing left over for all this other infrastructure we're talking about. So I think what we need to do is go back and revisit some areas there, how we're doing business, and see if we can't do it in a cheaper way. One area, for instance, there, redevelopment. In 1996, you formed a redevelopment agency in our town. And that's another area that needs to be addressed whenever you have a blighted deal. I come from a town where we had redevelopment. Inside of 5-6 years after we formed our agency, we were seeing results. Here we have seen nothing in, 7 years down the pike there. Yeah, the gentleman got up at a few council meetings back and says, well, this is a 25, 30-year, 40-year program. It takes that long to get it. No, it doesn't. Time you get in your 25th and 30th year, you're winding down. In fact, it becomes a declining deal there, and it should be wrapped up by then. To date, it's my understanding, a couple of questions I want to put on there. It's my understanding that the city floated, I think it was a $2 million bond in regards to the redevelopment. I think one question we need to ask is, how much of that money that was floated there has been spent to date, and what has it been spent on? It's my understanding we get approximately on of our first agency district now about $200,000 a year. About $100,000 of that goes to supplementing staff wages, benefits, and that that's being charged out the redevelopment district. We're currently now, the city managers would like to get a redevelopment director in there at $90,000 a year. Well, you know, you don't have to be any Einstein to figure out if you're spending $90,000 and $100,000, well, you're consuming all what you're bringing in from that redevelopment district there. Maybe we got to look at passing on that job, since we're a small city anyhow. We need to have people wear more hats around here, to our current community development director. It's not that we got people knocking down our doors here and that they don't have some free time once in a while that they can handle both jobs. You've got a meeting scheduled tonight for redevelopment, or you have nothing on the business agenda. There's one deal I'd like to see you look into, is perhaps maybe drop the idea of a redevelopment director. Use that $90,000 for doing some redevelopment. Maybe putting on some streets or something along that line within those districts there, instead of having to consuming by adding more and more employees. We're going to get to the point there. We're going to have to start letting people go, because if we don't get some, in the near future, some more money coming in here, we can't afford to keep paying these people. The other issue that I'm looking at in regards to the same thing, salaries and that, our biggest salary going out today, and we got to have it, is our public safety, namely the police department. Last year, they've got $2.3 million. This year, they're consuming about $2.6 million. Next year, they're probably going to be pushing for $3 million for a deal. That's you can see where it's consuming all our funds there. At the previous council meetings, and at my understanding, at the previous council, which four of you were members on, a plan was presented by Sheriff Hedges on outsourcing to his sheriff's department there. It was given to the city manager, and you directed him, those of you that are on that council, to come up, to evaluate it and come up and make public the offering that was presented by him. To date, I have never seen anything done with it. I know Councilman Lieberman on several occasions has asked, what about the other one will usurp it within its combines. However, the sheriff's department is very real. We don't have a lot of the demands, for instance, that the city of Pismo has in that, and we can use a sheriff's department setup there. I think you can save legitimately about $750,000 by going to the sheriff's department there. Just alone on the communication records, you'll save close to $400,000. That was in your grand jury report. There was an interesting editorial in the Santa Maria Times on last Friday on the 12th, where they have a similar problem. We're not the only cities facing these problems there. Guadalupe right now is facing a problem now, whether they want to go over to the sheriff's department there. And this article points out several factors there that, well, the common result that the people say, well, you get slower response times, you have more crime, and it's less personal attention by going to the Sheriff's Department. Well, they have four major cities down here in Santa Barbara that's been using the Sheriff's Department for some time. It's Carpinteria, Buellton, Goleta, and Solvang. And a couple of those cities are about our size and that. And they have experienced none of these distractions there, and they're quite happy with the resources they're getting out of the Sheriff's Department there. Also, this article points out, you'll also save in a sense that a police department is not a stagnant deal. It keeps requiring more efforts, more training, more this and more that. So what's going to be $2.6 million, 5 years down the line, you may be looking at $4 or $5 million. I don't see you bringing in that kind of income to pay for that. And that's just one department we're talking about. The city no longer needs to be concerned about the cost of supporting law enforcement infrastructure and maintaining the fleet of patrol cars and other police vehicles. I think if you add that in to the fact that you eliminate what we're talking about in the grand jury report here, I think you can save close to $750,000 there on that alone. That could be applied then to our other public safety division there, because so far all we've been doing is Band-Aid approaches there. By your own very words, the fire chief's words, I can't guarantee anything. This is a Band-Aid approach. Obviously, we need a better kind of service. I believe the Councilman Lieberman or one of your other people, I keep getting him, he's going to blame me for picking on him tonight, but I think you say the startup just for the CDF alone is something like $600,000 a year. Well, here's we're talking $750,000 right here. We can look into something like that. We can offset what we save on the police department by looking to the getting the CDF contractor. And so I think you really got to seriously, we've been talking about it for a long time. You keep sitting back and say, well, we got a committee. We're going to look into it. We can't wait till tomorrow. The bills keep running in. They keep wanting more money for this and that. We need to address it now. And I think it's seriously, you need to look into both those options there. I could go on all night on this here, but I'll leave it to, up to somebody else there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chuck. Anybody else? Anybody want to respond?
I had a question of Chuck.
Come back up.
Okay, you got 3 minutes.
You had an article in the newspaper, and you said that you had a newspaper out. It would be nice if, I don't know if any of the other council members have received one, but I'd sure like to receive one to see what your articles are about.
Sure, I'll give you one. Not a problem.
Thank you.
You want to address to your home address? You want to address to your business town or entitled to see what actually is going on and various issues in that and keep them informed. So it's just a matter of keeping people informed. You want a copy of it? I'm more than happy to send you one.
I read the paper. Let me respond a little bit to Chuck. Chuck, one of your issues was a redevelopment agency, and you felt that the community development person could handle that job. Well, as you've mentioned, it's been going on for 7 years, and the community development person has not moved our redevelopment farther. You know, hasn't moved it forward. That was actually, I think, a council direction to see if we could find someone specifically involved in redevelopment. And that was one of our goals. And we didn't. The city manager did not bring that to us. I think we basically said to him, "Hey, this
I'm
isn't working."
He brought that paper, thank you.
Well, that's what you said.
A limited amount of money there.
Right.
And we got to learn to wear more hats. The small city.
Well, that could
you
be true.
Be in charge of the paper waste. You can't have somebody in charge of paper supply, the pencils, and that. You have to have people wear more hats than that.
You have to
survive as a city without coming in with more money along there. You have to be willing to go and walk that extra mile. And I'm not directing that necessarily to the council.
Let me tell you where our thinking came from. And you may be right. That might work. But it hasn't worked. So sometimes you have to realize when things aren't working, you need to try something different. If that doesn't work, you try something else. At this point, our redevelopment agency really hasn't worked. You're right. I agree with you. And the only way it's going to get moving, in my opinion, is if we find someone that can basically direct that redevelopment agency and get it off the dime. And if it costs us $90,000 a year to get someone to do that, that can bring back hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's worth it. You know, that's what we're trying to do. So the other thing I want to respond to you is on public safety issues. We have talked about consolidation with the Sheriff's Department. And there could be some savings. We really haven't sat down and talked numbers with the Sheriff's Department. And the other thing that we're going to have to look at when we do that is what kind of service do we want? If we want the same service we have right now, we may be not gaining anything at all. If we want to have someone next door, just as we do right now, so that you can walk up there at 2 in the morning or right now and issue a complaint, that may cost us, because you can't do that in the South County. You can't go to Oceano and walk up to the Sheriff's Department substation and get response. You have to go to San Luis to get response. So that's a value that we may, that's not even in the consideration. We don't know what that's going to cost. We don't know what it's going to cost to have traffic officers, because from my point of view, I don't see the Sheriff's Department being real involved in traffic. So that would be something that we'd have to negotiate. We've had concerns tonight. People talked about the concern of crossing Grand Avenue and the speeders on Grand Avenue. If we go to the Sheriff's Department, that may get worse. I'm not saying the response will get worse. You know, when you have a call at your house for a rape, robbery, burglary, or something like that, I'm not saying that the response will be any worse. But my fear is that the response will be worse as far as speeders, as far as people walking across the street and things like that. Those are things that are negotiable when you talk to the Sheriff's Department. So we don't really know at this point whether we're going to save $750,000, $100,000. It's really hard to kind of comment to it.
I appreciate your comments. You actually sit down, talk, and listen.
More behoovous as far as getting a better service there. But we'll never know that until you take that first leap.
At our last meeting, we asked our city manager.
In regards to consolidating the cities, my problem with that is that's been tried in the past. We have egos involved with the departments here. In fact, one of the reasons that it failed back during the 90s was partially due to our own department here. There was a lot of officers in this department had concerns that they took to the chief there that they'd be gobbled up by the Aurora Grande department there, and they would not come out on the top side of it for us.
I don't think that had anything to do with it. What it had to do with in the last consolidation was the fact that we were going to have two stations open, and we were going to be paying back and forth financially, and it just wasn't going to work out for Grover. We weren't going to get any more response. We weren't going to get any more people on the street, but it was going to cost us more money in the long run. So that's where that failed. And the only way it can really work out is if all three cities, in my opinion, decide to consolidate. Or even if we do with Aurora Grande, it needs to be something better than what we had before. But we didn't have any discussions. We just came up with a plan. That wasn't.
I think you really need to look into the county deals, because they actually have more overall control. And one point, I won't belabor it, I know several gentlemen have mentioned here in the past,
they have previous services as mayors and council elsewhere, and they went to the county. I came from down in Southern California, native son down there, and back in the 60s, my town had about 70,000 people down there. They had an outstanding fire department. Most of them were cut with mine and that. And what they chose, all the major cities around there chose to go to the county. This is back in the 60s. Even though they had great, upstanding, running fire departments there, because in the long run, they'd rather be part of a bigger organization, because it's going to offset a lot of problems that will arise in the future. To this day, all those cities are still under the county fire department. You don't see very few individual city fire departments down there, and it's worked out quite well.
Well, you mentioned that we spend so much money on personnel. If we go to CDF, Steve has the numbers. I believe it's in the neighborhood of $600,000 to $800,000. More money if we go to CDF.
Right now, though, you also mentioned that unless you're giving out, and I don't think you're giving out false information there, you indicated the last meeting there on our band-aid approach there in the fire department, as we keep increasing this and that in order to offset this, you're approaching 600,000 now, or potential of 600,000.
I don't think so.
I think it was on the last tape you had.
Did you want to say something?
Sure. I think the number we're talking about with regard to CDF is in the neighborhood of probably around $800,000 more than we're currently spending, including what we're spending on the provisional staffing approach that we're using now.
Does anybody else want to? I don't want to be the big mouthpiece, so
well,
you guys.
No.
Too late.
I just wanted to get my foot in it.
Go ahead, Chuck. I'm sorry.
Yes, you may put initially in $800,000 on it, but you still have the big organization behind you. Right now, a lot of people don't realize it. We have no hazmat
team in our own fire department. I talked to the chief last year on a budget. He said, we can't afford to go out and do the training on this. We got a railroad track.
Are trained to a minimum level. I was trained for a first responder. I mean, a first responder knows isolation, safety notifications, and you stand by until the county hazmat team is rolled out. That's not CDF. It's a coalition of several different fire departments in the county that have hazmat resources on this side of the grade as well as the north side of the grade. So I think it's important that we kind of have a full disclosure of the process, just procedurally. I did the town hall meeting. It was a minimum of a $600,000 hit. $600,000 brought 24/7 staffing to the city without a chief sitting in Grover Beach. The chief would be a division chief covering a region. And the city manager mentioned $800,000. As you go up, you start running into things like having a chief available as a staff member and things of that nature. I kind of dancing around quickly to looking at potentially sharing resources with other cities, and obviously you saw the tape from the last meeting. To me, if there's a conceptual agreement with one or two of the cities that adjoin us, when you add up our populations, we're bigger than San Luis Obispo. If there's an openness to having a discussion about sharing resources with law enforcement, I think it's going to be an easier pill to swallow than going with the county, because you have a bigger collective bargaining unit. The deputies make more money than the municipal officers of the South County. And CDF, you want to talk about CDF, and again, I'm not an opponent of CDF, but it's a state bargaining unit. I mean, their engine captains, I'm trying to remember the number for their new agreement that goes into place, if it hasn't already. Chief, just give me a nod. Isn't it around $80,000 base for a captain? Something like that? I'm looking for a nod.
Which chief?
About a CDF engine company captain.
Oh, that's correct.
Yeah, it's about 80 grand base salary before they run into overtime. So it's one of those propositions that we need to entertain and figure out how we can fund it in the long term.
That would be taking it out of the hands of our state. Currently now, every 2 years, you got to go behind those closed doors there and negotiate a new contract with these guys. And they're pointing out, hey, they get this over here and that. This would, by contracting out, you're going for services. That's up to the county tell you to provide what they're going to charge for. You're going to find that's going to be cheaper than trying to run your own department.
But what I was saying, Chuck, and then I'm really going to stop because I don't want to dwell on this too long, is going back to the police scenario, regional versus a countywide contract services or some kind of merging of resources, the collective bargaining is going to be less of a detrimental hit, I guess, to our budget than I would say having a state organization like CDF. Because once we contract out, we contract out. And whatever their collective bargaining unit comes up with, we're kind of held hostage to that. So I think I'm open to contracting services. I'm the first person to say I'm open to contracting services. We need to be careful about what we enter into for the long term, just like what you're saying.
My question to you is, and I'm not opposed to what you're saying up there necessarily, we need to look into it.
Certainly.
We've been talking for the last how many councils now about we're going to look into it, we're going to look into it.
It's my number one thing.
Oh, we're going to hold another meeting here. We need to look into it.
Certainly.
We'll never know the true answer until we look into it.
Right. I agree.
Thank you for your time. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add one thing about planning and building, because it's one area I think I have a little experience in. And the previous speaker talked about consolidating.
We're going to take a 10-minute break.
Well, the previous speaker, I'll make this quick. The previous speaker talked about people wearing more than one hat. Well, let me tell you, the community development director in this city will make less money than anyone else in this county, and arguably Santa Barbara County, and yet.
And the community development director for this city wears more hats than probably any community development director I've ever heard of, let alone our surrounding area. It's a very complex department. And even though we're a small city, we're responsible for the same legal requirements as larger cities. Our community development director traditionally has been responsible for managing building, planning, public works, public utilities, engineering, capital improvement programs, redevelopment agency area, and general economic development. And it hasn't worked. You're right. And that's why we needed to budget, or, you know, you recommended to budget for a economic development coordinator to focus on redevelopment and economic development, because that's what's going to get us out of some of the problems we have. But we are stretched. It's hard to see from the other side of the fence, but the staff here are stretched thinner than you can imagine. And felt I needed to bring that up.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Robert.
Thank you, sir.
Yay.
First of all, we have a great police department, and I am strongly opposed to contracting out our police services. The police chief brought up two excellent examples tonight of why it's important to have a local police department. The gentleman who had the heart attack on the 300 block of 9th Street, or 10th, yeah, 9th Street, that was three blocks away from the police station, about the same time that the officers are at the police station getting their assignments or whatever. If that officer was responding from Arroyo Grande or even Napomo, because the sheriff goes down there as well, that man would have died. He wouldn't have been here. And then the lieutenant was at his station, and he was able to grab the device that he needed to go handle a call. And if that was not a local officer responding to that, he had the capability to go to his office and grab the weapon where he was and respond to that call, the chief is right. The city would be involved in a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, even though it was a justified shooting. So by the fact that we've had these great police officers in our city, they work for our city, and I don't know how many of them live in our city, but I hope most of them do. These two examples that we get, that the city gave out these awards to tonight, would not have occurred with the contract police department. Now, I've been watching Channel 20 and reading the newspapers for quite some time, and I've been very interested in this contracting out. Now, I used to be a volunteer firefighter in this city somewhere around 88, 89 for about 2 years. And so I know a little bit about the city and how it runs, and I want to talk about the fire department later because I think a lot of people are giving up on the fire department, and it's too early to give up on that. But I want to focus on the police contracting. The gentleman brought up the thing about contracting in Southern California. Well, I, too, grew up in Southern California, and I moved up here about 15 years ago. I went back to Southern California for about 5 years and returned this year. And let me report to you what's going on in Southern California with contracting out. I'm going to use L.A. County as an example because I'm pretty sure that's what Chuck was using. The city of Santa Fe Springs has had the sheriff's department since the city incorporated from their way back in the beginning. They have now contracted out to the city of Whittier for their police services because the county got too expensive. The city of Commerce has long had the L.A. County Fire Department since their incorporation. They have now contracted out to the city of Montebello because the county fire department has now gotten too expensive. If the city throws away our local police force to contracting, once we throw it away, it's gone. We're never going to bring it back because the startup cost will be prohibitive at that time. If we contract out to the sheriff's department or any other agency, we are going to be held to their problems every year. If their salaries go up, the city's budget has department. We lose a lot of local control. And God forbid the day would come where the police department gets a little bit out of control. Who are we going to go to? And now you can call the police chief in here and you can spank him. You've got local control. But you can't do that with the county. Now, the issue with the fire department. I just saw the stop button go off there. But the fire department is a different story, okay? I strongly believe to have a successful volunteer fire department, you got to have great leadership, great motivation, but most importantly, you got to have a sense of tradition. Now, the Grover Beach Fire Department has never had a sense of tradition. That can't be changed, okay? Or it can be changed, okay? Now, as far as the current leadership goes, I know some people have a problem with that, but from the stuff that I've heard behind closed doors and from my contacts and from everybody else I've known in the area, current fire chief does a pretty good job with his guys, okay? I kind of sense that there might be a problem between city management or city council and the chief. I've kind of picked that up a little bit. I don't know what those issues are. But from what I understand, his guys stand behind him 100%, and that's what's important, is your volunteer standing behind your chief. Because I've been a volunteer where we didn't stand behind the chief, as both volunteer chief and a paid chief. So I know how difficult it is to be a firefighter and not have the support of your chief or your city council. So, but going back to contracting on the fire department, if we give up on a volunteer fire department, then obviously the city can't afford a full-time fire department. And I could see contracting out the fire department, but the police department is a big no-no. You're losing way too much there. The other concern was with our volunteer fire department or a small paid staff volunteer fire department or a pay call, whatever you guys switch to. You know, California has the most comprehensive mutual aid and automatic aid agreement in the world. No other fire departments in the country, including the entire world, have such better agreements of mutual aid and cooperation as the state of California does. The only thing that I'm concerned about the fire department is they only have two fire trucks in the firehouse. There should be at least three. But anywhere in the state of California, they can call up one of Grover's fire trucks, and it's gone. It's on its way. On the same hand, when we have a big fire in this city, we can have as many fire trucks as it takes, whether it's three fire trucks in the local community or 500 responding from the state of California, they're here. And we don't have to pay for it. They're on the spot. They're coming. The hazmat team, just as the council member brought it up, I get riled up when people say, you know, we don't have a hazmat team and we need one. We don't need one. The county pays for that. I think the city might even contribute funds to that. I'm not sure. If they don't, they probably will. They'll probably be forced to do it sooner or later. But we don't need our own hazmat team. The hazmat team's on call with the county. When we need them, we dial the county communication center, and it's here. So trying to justify that we need to contract out because we can't afford services that we really don't need, we don't need it. In 15 years, we've needed a hazmat team less than five times, the train incident being the most common reason for it. But no city, no matter what you do with your budget, is going to be prepared when you have a disaster like that. You're going to rely on outside agents no matter what you do. But anyways, that's my soapbox. I'm strongly opposed to contracting. And good luck.
And okay, you said you were shy, right? Yeah.
let's take about a 10-minute break. Be back at 9:20 or 9 somewhere in there.
Mr. Scholes? Mr. Scholes?
I think it's turned off. We can start.
Yeah, just seven times.
Oh, he thought it was an echo.
I don't answer calls then. It's like my kids. He only said it 8 times.
Okay, we'll reconvene this public meeting, the town hall meeting. Looks like we lost most everyone. Is anyone that would like to speak again that spoke once before or hasn't spoke? Please come forward and let's continue our dialogue. Helen.
Helen McIver, 355 North Grove Beach. One thing I'd like to ask you people, is there any way, you'll probably have to ask your city manager or your attorney, that you can have an oversight of the community grant funds that you have? What are they called? I'm sorry?
Community Development Block Grants?
Yes. If there is some way that you can ascertain, whether it's my nonprofit organization or any other, we have oversight. In fact, we've got three boards over us, and they all know what we're doing and so on and so forth. And I'm wondering if the council can't find out where the money goes from the various funds and be sure they're using for what the people applied them for. That's my number one question. The other one, now, did you take money out of the water and sewer funds to have extra money to do the divider that you're going to put between 9th and 10th Street? Did any?
Oh, the median.
Okay. Are water and sewer funds sacred where they can't be used for any other projects or anything like that?
Unless they're borrowed.
Yeah, they can be borrowed, and as long as they are repaid at the same with interest that they would have earned while they were idle,
They can't be used for bonds or anything as backup for bonds?
No.
Okay. One of the reasons I'm thinking of that...
Well, they could be for water sewer projects.
Right. Yes, but, I understand. Yeah. I understand that. But the thing I was thinking of is you had raised our water rates some time ago before the bond was passed for the finishing of the Lopez Dam retrofit, and I understand that is completed now, and hopefully our water prices won't go up. I realize we've got to do the filtration plant or whatever has to be done, but I'd like to make it, the council make sure that the water and sewer funds are there, that they're not used for other projects. Thank you. I won't come back and bug you tonight.
Okay. Actually, part of the CDBG money is
before we write a check to them. And So that level of oversight is much stronger than it was in the past.
And I could add to that, I just went to a CDBG meeting last week, and HUD is requiring more stringent and detailed monitoring and reporting requirements that will be administered through our local operator, the county. And so to ensure that projects that are funded, such as various facility improvements, or that the programs are actually being spent for those particular uses. So it's being implemented actually from the top down to make sure.
Okay. Marcia Bolionitz again. I just wanted to comment on my feelings as a resident of this community for almost 12 years. I think that a lot of city council people who've run successfully for office in the past 10 years have run on the platform that they are concerned about our infrastructure, and our streets have got to be repaired. I've been concerned for 10 years when I attended a lot of planning committee meetings about the redesign of Grand Avenue and traffic calming and putting in medians and putting in palm trees and this and that, and diverting traffic down, well, where I live on South 9th Street between Rockaway and Long Branch, and yet no one ever mentions curbs, gutters, and sidewalks, and certain residents and churches who refuse to put them in, even after they have improved their property, which I believe is the law, and also just repaving our streets. If you're going to redirect traffic down South 9th, you've got to have a pavement, and there's weeds growing down the middle of the street. And it's so bad that when the mothers take their kids down the middle of the street in the strollers, and I am not exaggerating, I have pictures, it wears down the tread, I've been told, so that the light at 9th Street, South 9th, and Grand doesn't always work efficiently, and there's been problems with the light being over long, like 3 to 5 minutes. And Councilwoman Santos knows what I mean, because I've come up before the council several times about this issue. I'm concerned that when I am at the intersection of South 9th and Grand, that I see every single day someone get tired of waiting as they're going down Grand and just elect to go through the light. They stop, and then they go through the light. And I think as a community where people are actually killed walking with the light in the crosswalk, that this is something we should be concerned about. And just touching briefly on our law enforcement, I am not in favor of having anything but our
second lights we've had here in Grover. And that is going to change, because I complained at how long you have to sit at the light there on 9th Street. But that's all going to change when we start our project, which should be, it's going out to bid, am I correct?
The award of the project will be before the city council on October 6th, next council meeting.
So that light and the light at 10th Street?
And 11th.
And 11th.
Will there be any consideration given to enforcing the ordinance to put in curbs, gutters, and sidewalks for some of these residents and businesses who never put them in?
I'll let Susan answer that. But to answer your first question about the streets and that, then
I think I'm just going to sit in the front row. Mm-hmm. Curb gutters and sidewalks can only be required when it's tied to a project. So the city does not have a policy or funding mechanism to go through each street and install curb gutter sidewalk, or to require a private property owner to do that. It's a improvement that's regulated in our zoning ordinance, and it can only be tied to projects actually when they are projects with a improvement value of a certain amount as well. So there's criteria established for when that's required.
So when that is met, which it has been over 8 years ago, is there any follow up done at all?
I can't speak to 8 years ago because I wasn't here. Uh-huh.
But that's when the improvements were done.
I don't know why curb gutter sidewalk was or was not required or installed at that time. Presently, when a project is approved, it's required to have curb gutter sidewalk, and it's followed through every time, or we don't issue building permits.
I have one other question that Marcia had brought up also. She spoke about the lighting that's over there by the church.
The illegal lights, yeah. The lighting poles, 30-foot-tall poles.
Do we have anything that covers that?
I'm not aware of that particular issue, but I can certainly look into that.
Very good. Thank you.
Stephen.
Marcia, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the map that the camera operator is kind of covering up for us. Thank you for pointing. But there's some legends in there, and it shows street improvements. I'm not sure quite of the extent of the specific period of those improvements, but you can see what's been completed, and it is, well, I know it's not impacting your neighborhood. We're working really hard to put as much money as we can into that. 6 years, Ron's telling me. Thank you.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and I have followed along with that. I was just concerned that with immediate improvements one block away, why there was not any immediate concern about the condition of 9th Street when it looks like it's going to be a diversive.
It's not going to be a diversive. They're not diversing.
They're not going to divert.
No, they're not diverting any traffic onto 9th Street. Everything's going to stay within Grand Avenue. That plan is long gone. Yes.
It's an old, yeah.
Yes. Also, I don't believe anyone's been hit in the crosswalk with a green light. They've been hit in a crosswalk, but not with a light. I think it's been 5th and Grand where the last fatality was. So, not to say that it won't happen. I mean, there's the difficulty with Grand Avenue is that both even in the morning or the afternoon, when you're driving east and west, the light, the sun is in your eyes a lot of times. It's very difficult. I mean, sometimes even if you've got the light, you don't know.
And those streets are a lot better than ours. I remember this lady back here telling 2 or 3 years ago over in the other room she could get grants. And it went in one ear and out the other, like I said before. People that want to run the city think they can do it better than people that, in the general public. And I just heard on the TV the other day where I think it was Robert Sheffer on CBS said the general public knows more than the politicians. It's really true. But everywhere I've been this summer, they have or getting good streets. And when I was down in San Diego, that planner of the county of San Diego said, you can't do anything anymore without a grant because you can't save enough. We can't save enough to buy a house. So, how are you going to build streets? But Mr. Eckbaum, we used to be in the same sort of business. And I remember when that business I was in, we had a salary percent. And boy, you didn't get over that salary percent. But I don't know the figures. I haven't seen them. I saw the heard about the budget. But don't you think we're a little bit over the salary percent in this city?
Yeah.
I was wanting to hear you say that. So maybe that's the reason why we can't do the things on streets. So here's $700,000. Is it going to be this year we fix streets or next year or the following year? Oak Park up there, it just keeps lingering on, lingering on. I've talked about stop signs. The one out there at Willow Road and Pomeroy. Boy, you could use them here. And I know they can't be expensive, that we can't afford them. Because, I mean, if you could, just like you said, salary percent just too high. But boy, I mean, there'd be some people laid off in that place I work at. So I think you should get that pencil and really sharpen it up. And it's like I've heard before here. We do a lot of talking, but there's no action. And it just seems like it goes on for the last 40 years here. Talk, 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 no action. Because the streets are not improved in 40 years here. But everybody else is. You can go north, you can go south, you can go east. Ours is still the same.
I don't agree with that one. I went along with you in the first one, but I don't agree with that one.
Well, I've been around, and I've
traveled
some streets.
We're improving streets, John. You just can't.
You can't paste them. you got to put something down there, because those trucks coming in here, they're going to break it up just as soon as you paste it. You're wasting your money when you paste it.
I want to jump in on what you were saying, David, too.
One other thing.
Okay, I'll wait.
Columbo.
I remember a few years ago, were you over another, you, three of you, I'd be in the other room when we bought the motorcycle. Were you three over there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can.
I think it was. I think I was.
And I remember them saying,
it was 1 3 years.
The council, because I know Fred Monroe was on, when we had it out. They was going to buy the motorcycle for $42,000. And then they come up, I don't remember the other council people on it at that time. So, let's get two cars. And I said, and it looks out the door. And I mean, the police patrol up there is scarce as hen's teeth. And you know, I worked my tail off for cheap. I talked blue to the city council, and he come on. And I did see him up there one day on a bicycle. I almost had a heart attack. But, you know, and there's kids on the street in an ATV, and he's on probation, and he's 14. We need somebody up there patrolling and seeing that people are safe. Well, I was in the meat department. We didn't take the guides off the saw and see how fast we could cut. We left the guides on there to protect ourselves. Safety.
Go, Steve.
I just wanted to piggyback on the streets issue. You know, we struggle. We try to find the money to do what we can. And a lot of times when you read the newspaper articles about what the other communities are doing, they'll list a huge slate of streets that they're doing, and you keep reading, and it's slurry seal. So I think we're doing the best we can when we do street rehab. Pismo and Morro Bay recently had articles where they were slurry sealing their streets, and I don't think that's what any of us want. So, thanks.
I wanted to kind of piggyback, too. Marcia left, and I'm sorry that she left, because she was talking about the residential streets and financing for those, and why are we doing Grand Avenue, et cetera, because the residential streets need it. Once again, that is another avenue that we've gotten a grant for. That's grant money that we're working with Grand Avenue on, and it's not something out of our general fund. So we do have grants, and we do work with them as much as we can. So it's not it's apples and oranges. And, John, you're talking about doing a 4-inch overlay someplace. We could do that all day long, but we'd only do 2 blocks instead of 15. So what do you want to have? Do you want to have 15 blocks done?
Mayor, we've gone for 35 years and never done nothing.
Yes, we have. The last 7 years, you've gotten more on your streets than you've ever had.
1 inch.
Well, 1 inch is better than no inch. We can do, like I said, we can do 30 blocks with 1 inch, or we can do 4 blocks with 4-inch. Which would you rather have? Do you want to live on one of the blocks that got 4-inch, or do you want to live on the, you know? We only have so much money.
Mr. Mayor, we
Steve.
Have. Yeah.
Looks like Mr. DiVincenzo wants to speak. Easy for me to say.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Steve DiVincenzo with San Luis Obispo Council Government Staff. Just wanted to give you a little update on what you have spent on streets and roads and what we've been working with your staff to do over the past several years. And John comes to our board and follows along, and quite honestly, your city is doing the best per capita of any city in our county. In the city of Gober Beach, over the past 4 years, we've seen about $6.8 million go into streets and roads, and that's not the money that you put in out of your general fund. That's the money that we've put in through the Council of Governments. A little over $2 million has gone into street rehabilitation, and that includes the money on the Pike, about $750,000, a little less than that, $233,000 on the Farrell rehab, on 10th Street pavement rehab, $107,000, Newport Avenue rehab was $225,000.
For a flower called Pismo Clarkia, we'd already be out to bid and probably constructing that
absolutely.
Piece of property.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's not because of your efforts that it was delayed. It was because of dealings with Caltrans and some of the environmental issues. But we've gotten through that, and it's about to go forward.
Before you go on, Shu, and I'd like to have Bob put that in big letters in the newspaper to let the citizens know exactly. I mean, you're hearing it right from the man. and make that one great big article.
Headlines. We're going to be breaking ground on the Pismo Beach, Grover Beach Boardwalk real soon. I'm really looking forward to that project. That is not a street and road project, I have to admit. But that's another $1 million that we're going to put into your community to link up with the boardwalk in Grover Beach so we can get some of those tourist folks connected to Grover Beach better and hopefully help stimulate your economy. And again, you've been talking about the Grand Avenue improvements. So that's another $881,000 project that is targeted as grant funds that are specifically for use on that project. We specifically targeted that project, and those monies can't be diverted for other street and road projects in the community. It's got to be used on Grand Avenue. And the concept behind that was to help stimulate your economy so that your retail sector could be strengthened and you could generate more sales tax, and that sales tax money would be going into your general fund that you can then use for streets and roads or for police or for fire or for the other uses that you may need to build a better community and hopefully stimulate economic growth and provide more funds and prime the pump. So just wanted to reinforce that your staff has done a great job in working with us and trying to find funds, and we've always found your staff to be very cooperative and hardworking in trying to build a better community for all your citizens over time. So if there's anything I can answer for you, I'd be more than happy to.
I just want to remind everybody that Steve used to work for Grover, so he has seen it happen himself.
Thank you. With that, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Way to go, Bob. Go get him.
John Bradbury, Chief of Police. I'd like to talk to Mr. Weissong's issue on ATVs on our city streets. That's illegal, and we'll be glad to take care of that. We have a lot of miles of city street. We can't be everywhere when there's two or three people on. And all I could suggest to him is, first of all, if your wife was so upset, she should have called instead of waiting for you to come home. You got fired up, then you don't call the police department. You call the city manager to issue a complaint.
Because he said he's in charge.
Well, we dispatch folks. All the city manager does is pat relay to us. You ended up with Lieutenant Thomas, who, when he figured out what you wanted, we dispatched a car, and within a minute, we had two units there because we knew to be there. And my only concern is, and I'd like to tell the public, if you've got an issue with traffic or you need your police department, call us now. Don't wait until someone comes home. Don't call your council person. Don't call the city manager. Call our dispatch center, 473-4511, if it's a non-emergency, and then we can send people. Our response time for priority one calls, those emergency calls, from the time that phone rings, the first ring in dispatch, till we have a unit on scene is 3 minutes and 45 seconds.
For this group of streets, phase 1, 2, 3, Saratoga 13th to 14th, Brighton 8th to 9th, South 16th, West Grand Long Branch. That's phase one. That goes out to bid in about a week. Phase two is Newport, front first, north first, Newport to Atlantic City, North 5th, Saratoga to Parkview. North 6th, Atlantic City to Parkview. And that's in the survey stage now, and it'll be designed shortly to go out to bid. And then phase 3 is South 10th, Long Branch to Rockaway, Seabright 4th to 5th, and South 5th, Trouville to Seabright. So those streets are all on the platter for this fiscal year. And the diagram I put up now is a construction calendar showing construction days for each of these various projects. But here we have phase one being awarded, and that's on out to bid on September 22nd. And phase two out to bid in early October. Phase three out to bid in early February. Award of the contract for phase one in November, phase two in January, and phase three in April. So we expect to be through with all of these street projects this coming fiscal year. And
that's barring weather, right?
Say again, Mayor?
That's barring weather?
Barring weather. Well, I think that we can get through all these even with some weather.
Okay.
So I'll be happy to answer any questions, but we do have a full platter as far as street work this fiscal year.
I would also point out that we structured that in phases, and if we get good bids, favorable bids, that there could be a fourth phase, and in fact, there's money in the budget to design next year's street program so that it can go out and be awarded in July, and construction can begin right away in the next fiscal year.
Ron, how about South 4th Street from Grand to Faro? Wasn't there some?
That is a project that is in the STIP pipeline, and Steve DeVincenzi could talk about that perhaps, but so far as I know, that funding has been delayed till 07.
Actually, what I think Councilmember Scholz is referring to is that we are going to be putting a one-inch overlay on a portion of that to stabilize the condition in the short run, recognizing that in the long run we would be relying on the STIP funding to improve it, I guess, clear down to like Highland or even.
But the bad news on that one is that given the state's budget crisis, it looks like those funds are going to be delayed for quite some time, and I don't have the schedule on the top of my head, but we've just had nothing but progressively bad. You know, the news has gone from bad to worse to worser in terms of the funding on the state highway system. The legislature has diverted about $3 billion from the states from our transportation funding, and that money, while it's constitutionally protected, will come back into transportation. We will see that money. We will get these projects, but it's not going to be for quite some time. And my fear is that they'll divert more money later, and they'll sort of keep leapfrogging.
Honorable Mayor, City Council, at the last council meeting I was asked about the status of the department's motorcycle. And since the chief forgot to mention this, we received information today that the motorcycle should be completed and shipped by the end of this week, so we will be able to have it back on the street as soon as we get it in to the city and checked in and make sure everything's to our standards. So the motorcycle will be up and running hopefully mid-next week. In response to Mr. Weisong's $42,000 on the cost of the motorcycle. In checking that, I believe that that $42,000 included the motorcycle, a traffic trailer, and associated equipment at the time. The total price of the motorcycle as replaced was right around $20,500. So the motorcycle didn't cost $42,000. It was traffic trailer, motorcycle, and associated equipment with at the time, which was paid for by the OTS grant. And there was a comment about, and I'm going on a different subject now, about police officers, employees of the police department living in Grover Beach or in the Five Cities areas. I'll let you know, and the majority of the officers and the employees do live in the Five Cities area. There are a few of us who live out of the Five Cities area. I myself lived here for 7 years before I finally moved. A lot of it had to do with people coming to my door and reporting crimes and asking me to sign off tickets. It's kind of disconcerting to have people knocking at your door at 2 o'clock in the morning to have you take a crime report. So for Mr. Ashton's comment that I believe he made a comment that most of the officers and employees don't live in the Five Cities, we do live here. We coach Little League teams. We're on community boards. We're in Cub Scouts. We're doing the Boy Scout stuff. You know, we not only work in this community, we live in this community, and we give back to this community. So I just wanted to put that out there so everybody knows that we're not just police officers taking money from the city. We give back to the community.
Thank you, Brian.
And he plays kickball.
Patricia Coelho Martin. I live at 1234 Seabright. I would like to address the stoplight at 8th and Grand, which has been awful here lately as far as it doesn't turn. You can be waiting till it turn left onto 8th. The green arrow does not come on, even though there's nobody coming the other direction for a long time, and you sit there and wait for it to go through the whole pattern. Other than that, I've been here since 1947, and I'll tell you right now, there were no streets back in 1947 in Grover. And there was, I think Grand Avenue was partially paved, and that was about it. The rest of it was, there was nothing. There was just no streets at all. They weren't paved. I have seen the growth that the city has done, including the sidewalks, gutters, and everything else that they've done, and I think they've done a fantastic job with the amount of revenue that they have to work with. Like I said, I've been here since 1947. My mother still lives in the same house on North 4th that she bought back in 1947, my mom and dad both. And we've seen it, and we've talked about it, her and I have, and the amazing amount of growth and the changes that we've seen, it's just amazing because, like I said, with what you've got to work with fund-wise, it's great. And I think you're doing a good job.
Thank you. John.
John, if we're going to take a motorcycle out of town to another place, I was told also that...
I guess we're going to get the answer here.
I knew we would. John Bradbury, Chief of Police. The motorcycle was rear-ended. There will be, I assume, insurance coming someday from the party that did that, but we couldn't wait for that. So we used other funds, gave up my patrol car for a while in order to order the motorcycle right away because the motor is very important to my traffic enforcement program. So we did order a new bike. There should be some insurance premiums coming. And I would defer to Martin on that. But the one-day loan to Pismo Beach is like mutual aid or any other kinds of activities. They loan us policemen at times. We loan them policemen, like the Harvest Parade that's coming up. We exchange personnel so then they'll help us at other times. And that's just part of doing business. And fortunately, our officer wasn't hurt in the accident.
Well,
okay. Did it?
Mr. Hayes, anything else?
All right, one last time.
Oh, come on. How do you?
Arlton.
Well, he's the only, he's one of the last, there's two
I was
people.
Kind of in,
there's,
I was there's only, left.
This was your idea, David. Don't
David,
be giving me
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you wanted this.
It was his idea, and I thank him for his idea.
It's because, a good idea.
It really is. I turned in this thing to your clerk the other day, or earlier tonight, and I just wanted to bring up one last thing. The traffic calming on Grand Avenue, that's a good idea. I understand why the city wants to do that. My biggest concern is, and me and Marsha are neighbors, by the way, and we live in the Long Branch townhomes. She faces 9th Street, and I face Long Branch. And Long Branch has long been a speedway, and it's an alternative traffic thoroughfare for Grand Avenue. And I know John's thinking that, but, you know, there's no good solution to this. No matter what you guys do, Long Branch is going to get worse. It's going to get a lot more traffic, and the speeds are going to pick up. And, you know, nobody wants to see the Grover Beach police get a reputation as, you know, ticket writers. But let's face it, I don't see any other way to slow traffic down around here anymore. You know, I encourage the police chief. He can park his radar trailer in front of my house. And I don't know if you have a recording of what the speeds are. But, it's a daily common problem. And I know you guys hear it from everybody. But, I mean, something needs to be done because all the traffic, let's face it, people are people. And if we have to keep stopping at all the little stoplights and all the other little traffic problems on Grand Avenue, people are going to divert down an alternate route. And the people who live south of this town, including Oceano, they come north on 13th Street, then they turn west on Long Branch, and they speed to the stop sign on 10th Street. Sometimes they stop, sometimes they just slow, you know, just proceed right through it anyways. And then they speed up as fast as they can down to 8th Street. And then they turn north on 8th Street, and they either divert down Long Branch or Rockaway all the way to 4th Street, or they finally go to Grand.
And green lights. You just go right through town. Be really, really nice. And then, conversely, those people that want to traverse the street pedestrian-wise have a real good opportunity to do that safely, too.
Well, I am a pedestrian on the street. I walk my dog down Grand Avenue every night. And I notice a lot of people lately have been talking about the streetlights at 9th and Grand and 8th and Grand. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I noticed that pattern, too. Usually when I walk down the street, I press the button, it turns green, the little walk light, and I just keep on going down Grand. But I have noticed the last 3 or 4 weeks, I'm standing there with the dog on a corner for sometimes 5 minutes. Maybe only 3 minutes, but it seems a lot longer than that. But I have noticed it. I don't know. But
I'm sure that'll be checked into. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I was kind of smiling at you because when you brought up Long Branch, that's the way I drove here this evening. That's usually the way I go when I come to City Hall because I live in South Grover. And I got to tell you, when we were talking about putting the sidewalks around the school, it came up that Long Branch, and I think Newport's probably another one, has about 120-foot wide right-of-way. That's the width of, I believe, Broadway in the city of Santa Maria. We're talking about a state route. I mean, so we can synchronize the lights on Grand all we want, but we need to find a way to deal with some of these large right-of-ways that this city has. You know, I know we don't have the covered wagons anymore, so there's no reason to circle the wagons. But, no, I agree with everything you just said.
It's, south on, if you continue south on Long Branch from 8th Street, there's a stop sign at every intersection until you hit 4th Street. And, you know, nobody likes to see more stop signs go up either, but unless the chief can dedicate resources to hand out tickets all day long, I think the stop signs is the only way they're going to solve that problem. One of your officers was in front of my house. Somebody had stole our registration tags. That's how I noticed six other cars on my street didn't have a registration, because I was looking for my neighbor who stole it. an allegedly neighbor, but anyways. While one of his officers was standing out there and taking his report, one of the cars came whipping down 45 miles an hour down Long Branch. He shined his flashlight at him, but what was he going to do, run down the street after him? But, you know, he kind of looked at me and smiled and said, sorry about that. And I said, well, welcome to the neighborhood, yeah. Because it's a daily occurrence, and not the police chief's fault, but yeah. I'd certainly like to see some tickets on that street, though. Thank you. I'm done. And
thanks.
Thank you for the opportunity. This
thank
was
you.
Great.
Thank you, Robert.
Fantastic.
Winding down?
Winding down. I can't pass up the opportunity. A little fear in amongst the people that visit our community and live here that they're going to get a ticket might be a good idea. And that will slow folks down. I can tell you that as of September 1st, we've already written more hazardous sites than we did all of last year. And the last year was the highest in the last 10 years. So we wrote about 860 hazardous sites all of last year. We're at about 905 this year. So we are writing a lot more tickets, hazardous sites. And we'll see about all of those cars that aren't registered, because we write those at an ever-increasing rate. Question?
As the old saying goes, book 'em, Dano.
Well, we're our
from Slocog and Florida. All those things that he sits. No, Slocog, right? Not Slorda. Who else is? Jim, Gehring, thank you. Appreciate it. And the rest of our staff.
I think you might make note, too, that our staff came to work at 8 o'clock this morning, and they're still here, and it's after 10. It's a long day.
This is early by staff standards.
No, there is no overtime.
They're getting out of here early.
Okay. Let's move into council committee reports. Does anyone have a council committee report they'd like to share? David?
No.
Steve?
No.
Good. Me neither.
No.
David, you went to my Grover Beautiful Committee.
He doesn't have anything to report.
He said it was beautiful.
Oh, it was nice. Very good. Thank you.
Dee, anything?
No, I wasn't here.
Okay, city manager's agenda. We have nothing. City council agenda. There's nothing. Back to public communication. I see none. Council communication.
I do have one on council communications. It's very important. When we went to the park dedication thing the other day, I had some checks from my work in my pocket, and I want to say that one of our public works guys found one of those checks that happened to fall out of my pocket. And he was very honest and came to my work and gave it back to me. So I want you to know that our employees are downright honest. And I want to thank him. His name was Robert.
Did you give him a reward?
Yeah.
He said he stepped on that rubber thing and about fell down and broke his neck.
That was yours.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Anybody else? Council communications? At this time, we're going to move into closed session. We have one item on the agenda. It's a conference with legal counsel. Pending litigation, Jensen versus City of Grover Beach.